हरे कृष्ण। ओवर योर नोट्स। यस्टरडे राधिका वाला प्रभु टुक टिल 35 राइट 28 है ओके फाइन। So let's welcome His Grace Vraj Sundar Prabhu to our Vidyapeeth session. So Prabhu is from ISKCON Bureau and Prabhu is also very much into study of Srimad Bhagavatam. He conducts an online course which has 350 students, right? And Prabhu has a very special way of inspiring devotees to study Bhagavatam. First, he would encourage them to. We have our OU notes, right? So Prabhuji has. Prabhuji encourages them to read all the translations of all the chapters. So each chapter would take 15 minutes. So daily, if one can spare at least 45 minutes, you will be able to read, say, 3 chapters. So 335 chapters will take around 3 months. So like that, Prabhuji inspires many devotees to study Bhagavatam, first an overview. Then he would encourage them to read purports also, daily couple of purports, like that. And Prabhuji runs a magazine called Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So 25,000 devotees receive that magazine. That is purely based on Srimad Bhagavatam. So far, the Bhagavatam is covering the contents of Bhagavatam systematically, that magazine. So he reached around till third canto. After our session today, Prabhuji will give a short presentation on his ideas for Bhagavat Vidyalay, then Nityam Bhagavat Sevaya, and how he is conducting this online Bhagavatam course. So let's welcome Prabhuji. We are loudly chanting Hari Bol!
Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
So 33. Your overview notes, he gives a table on how different things are defined. What is yama, niyama, sama, dama, tolerance? These are like standard definitions given directly by Krishna. So Uddhava is asking the standard definitions for some universal aspects of civilized people. So Krishna is defining them. Shri Bhagavan Vacha. अहिंसा सत्यमस्तेयम् असंगो ह्रीर् असंचयः आस्तिक्यं ब्रह्मचर्यं च मौनं स्थैर्यं क्षमाभयं शौचं जपस्तपो होमः श्रद्धातिथ्यं मदर्चनम् तीर्थाटनं परार्थेह तुष्टिर आचार्य सेवनं एते यामः सनियमा उभयोर्द्वादश स्मृताः पुंसाम् उपासितस्तात यथा कामं दुहन्ति हि।
Supreme Personality of Godhead said, non-violence, truthfulness, not coveting or stealing the property of others, detachment, humility, freedom from possessiveness, trust in the principle of religion, celibacy, silence, steadiness, forgiveness and fearlessness are the 12 primary disciplinary principles.
They are yama. Primary disciplinary principles are yama. So ahimsa, satyam, asteyam, asango, harir, they are all yamas. So reading them will take maybe a minute only, but implementing will take a whole life. So all the next set of verses, the rest of the chapter is like that only. And even if you have to elaborate on each of them could constitute a big seminar. So in Vidyapeeth overview class, we will not discuss so much. We'll just go through the definitions. Yeah, go ahead.
Internal cleanliness, external cleanliness, chanting the holy names of the Lord, austerity, sacrifice, faith, hospitality, worship of me, visiting holy places, acting and desiring only for the supreme interest, satisfaction and service to the spiritual master are the 12 elements of regular prescribed duties.
They are all niyamas. First are yamas, first 12 are yamas, next 12 are niyamas. Then
these 24 elements bestow all desired benedictions upon those persons who devotedly cultivate them.
These are yama and niyama. Now we will read the other ones. Shama, dama, etc. Shamomannishtata buddher. Dama indriya samyama. Titiksha dukha sammarsho. Jihvopastajayo dhritihi. Dandanyasah param danam. Kamatyagastapasmritam. Svabhava vijata sauryam. Satyam cha samadarshanam. Anyacha srunutavani. Kavibhi parikirtitam. Karmashva sangama saucham. Tyagasanyasa uchyate. Dharma ishtam dhanam runam. Yajnoham bhagavattama. Dakshina jnana sandesha. Pranayama parambalam.
Absorbing the intelligence in me constitutes mental equilibrium, and complete discipline of the senses is self-controlled.
So these are all shama and dama. Absorbing intelligence in Krishna, that is mannishta buddhir, that is shama. Dama is indriya samyamaha, discipline of controlling senses, that is dama. Then titiksha dukkha sammarsho. So titiksha means tolerance. Dukkha sammarsho means dukkha is some difficulties or suffering. Sammarsho, so an ability to patiently endure that kind of difficulty or suffering is called tolerance. Then jihvopastha jayodhritihi. So jihva and upastha means the urges of genitals and tongue also one has to conquer. That is called steadfastness, right? Yeah, dhriti, that is called dhriti. Yeah, please read.
Tolerance means patiently enduring unhappiness, and steadfastness occurs when one conquers the tongue and genitals. The greatest charity is to give up all aggression toward others, and renunciation of lust is understood to be real austerity.
Greatest charity is to give up aggression towards others, not just giving money. Then austerity is renunciation of enjoyment. Yeah, that is tapaha. You continue to read.
Real heroism is to conquer one's natural tendency to enjoy material life, and reality is seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere. Truthfulness means to speak the truth in a pleasing way, as declared by the great sages.
Is that? Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam jet. So satyam is needed, but it should be anudvega karam. If you remember in the first canto, when Vidura went to Hastinapur, all the Pandavas received him nicely, and they asked about they inquired about the welfare of Yadus and other people. So Vidura replied all of them, but he did not reveal the news of the annihilation of Yadu dynasty. Because Prabhupada writes that according to Niti Shastra, one should not unnecessarily announce a bad news. Anyways, it will come to know, and why to unnecessarily discuss it and aggravate it? So satyam is needed, but only if it is befitting the things, befitting the circumstance, yatha vithi, then only he will be speaking it. Yes. It should not cause aggression or agitation in others' minds.
Implies like sometimes someone preaches, we tell that don't preach to a person who is not susceptible.
It might unnecessarily agitate him only. He may go little more far away from doing this.
Cleanliness is detachment in fruitive activities whereas renunciation is the sannyas order of life. The true desirable wealth for human beings is religiousness, and I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, am sacrifice. Religious remuneration is devotion to the Acharya with the purpose of acquiring spiritual instruction, and the greatest strength is the pranayam system of breath control.
So, in the purport, Hridayananda Goswami and team, they focus on just a few of these and elaborate them. So, truthfulness means one should speak in a pleasing way so that there will be a beneficial effect. Bluntly speaking the truth, if it doesn't have beneficial effect, then that kind of speaking is not very much appreciated. Then real heroism is to conquer one's lower nature. Certainly everyone likes to propagate his own fame as a brilliant person, but everyone is subjected to anarthas, lust, greed, etc. Therefore, if one can conquer these lower characteristics generated from the modes of passion and ignorance, one is a greater hero. Heroism is not just fighting with people, dancing with duets with heroines. That is not real heroism. Here it is, it says conquering one's lower nature. Cleanliness therefore means to give up material attachment, not merely to frequently rinse one's skin with water. Taking bath 10 times in a day, it's not cleanliness. Or doing maha cleaning of the room 10 times in a day, it's not cleanliness. It says to give up material attachment, that is cleanliness. Real renunciation is to give up one's sense of false proprietorship over one's relatives and wife. So, renunciation, just by changing, Prabhupada gives this popular example, just by changing one's residential place from a palace to a forest doesn't make him a renunciant. Right? Because palace doesn't belong to him, forest also doesn't belong to him. Just by going from here to there, he'll not become a renunciant. Renunciation means renunciation of false ego and that sense of proprietorship, sense of ahanta and mamata. One may offer remuneration to his spiritual master who has enlightened him by distributing the same knowledge to others. Remuneration is not, Guru Dakshina is not in terms of money, right? To distribute that knowledge to others is real remuneration. Yesterday His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj was repeatedly mentioning this point. Right, your great fortune is to realize what you have received in Vidyapeeth by studying the scriptures, and you have to share to others. Maharaj was repeatedly saying. So preaching work thus constitutes the highest form of remuneration. Like that. Next set of verses. Bhagoma Aishwaro Bhavo Labho Mad Bhaktiruttama Vidyatmani Bhidabhado Jugupsa Harir Akarmasu Srir Gunanaira Bhikshadya Sukham Dukha Sukhatvaya Dukham Kama Sukha Bhiksham Pandito Bandha Mokshavit Murkho Dehadyaham Buddhihi Panthamam man nirgama smrita nigama smrita utpathas chitta vikshepaha svargasattva gunodaya narakastama unnaho bandhur guru raham sakhe gruham shariram manushyam Gunadhyo hiya adhya uchyate Daridro yastu asantushta Krupano yo jitendriyaha Guneshu asakta dhir isho Gunasango viparyayaha Eta udhavate prashnaha Sarve sadhuni rupitaha Kimvarnitena bahuna Lakshanam gunadoshayoha Gunadoshadrishir dosho Gunastu bhayavarjitaha. The last lines are very key lines. Yeah, please read.
Actual opulence is my own nature as the personality of Godhead, through which I exhibit the 6 unlimited opulences. The supreme gain in life is devotional service to me, and actual education is nullifying the false perception of duality within the soul. Real modesty is to be disgusted with the improper activities, and beauty is to possess good qualities such as detachment. Real happiness is to transcend material happiness and unhappiness, and real misery is to be implicated in searching for sex pleasure. A wise man is one who knows the process of freedom from bondage, and a fool is one who identifies with his material body and mind. The real path in life is that which leads to me, and the wrong path is sense gratification, by which consciousness is bewildered. Actual heaven is the predominance of the mode of goodness, whereas hell is the predominance of ignorance. I am everyone's true friend, and acting as the spiritual master of the entire universe and one's home in the human body. My dear friend Uddhava, one who is enriched with good qualities is actually said to be rich, and one who is unsatisfied in life is actually poor. A wretched man is one who cannot control his senses, whereas one who is not attached to sense gratification is a real controller. One who attaches himself to sense gratification is the opposite, a slave. Thus, Uddhava, I have elucidated all the matters about which you inquired. There is no need for more elaborate descriptions of these good and bad qualities, since to constantly see good and bad is itself a bad quality. The best quality is to transcend material good and evil.
Very profound definitions of all these terms, like strength, mercy, profit, happiness, unhappiness, all these are given by Krishna. So we can regularly refer to this. Then some of those striking definitions are elaborated in the purport. The greatest profit in life is to achieve personal loving service to the Lord, not getting so much riches. Right? Mere bashfulness does not constitute modesty. And one who is satisfied in Krishna consciousness and thus does not seek material pleasure or suffer material unhappiness is considered to be situated in real happiness. So satisfaction with one's process, that is real happiness. Then real path is the path that leads one to Krishna. Right? Heaven is where mode of goodness is prominent. Hell is where mode of ignorance is prominent. So mere changing of geographical locations will not constitute one's position to be in hell or heaven. It's about the consciousness. We are where our consciousness is. We are what mode is influencing us. So that these are very nicely elaborated. So after mentioning, after giving the definitions of all this, Krishna at the end, in the 45th verse, he says, Eta uddhavate prashnaha sarve sadhu nirupitaha kim varnitena bahuna lakshanam gunadoshayoho. So kim varnitena, what is the need of elaborate description of these good and bad qualities? Since to constantly see good and bad itself is bad. Constantly discriminating what is good and what is bad on a material platform itself is a bad quality. We have to transcend this good and bad on a material platform and enter the ultimate transcendental platform, okay, where everything is good only. So the best quality is to transcend material good and evil. So this is how Krishna concludes this chapter. But Uddhava catches Krishna in this point. You are saying don't discriminate between good and bad. What is material good and material bad? But you say all your Vedas are saying this. Right? Vedas have descriptions of what is good, what is bad, what is hell, what is heaven, what is lower activity, what is higher activity. So all these descriptions are in Vedas. Right? And Vedas are encouraging us to discriminate between good and bad on a material level. So that is needed for a proper functioning of human civilization. And whatever you say is Vedic knowledge. Right? Now you are saying, don't discriminate between material good and bad. Transcend that. Okay? Should we refer to the Vedas, which are your words? and which are referred to your world, which is almost equal to Vedas, which is equal to Vedas. So Uddhava is like very strongly arguing with Krishna in the beginning of 20th chapter. Then Krishna responds. That is the connection between the 19th and 20th chapters. We'll begin the 20th chapter. Sri Uddhava Uvacha Vidhischa Pratishedhascha Nigamohishvarasyate Avekshate Ravindaksha Gunam Dosham Chakarmanam.
Sri Uddhava said, "My dear lotus-eyed Krishna, you are the Supreme Lord, and thus the Vedic literatures consisting of positive and negative injunctions constitute your order. Such literatures focus upon the good and bad qualities of work."
So Vedas are nothing but your injunctions, but they consist these two, positive and negative injunctions both, right? So I want elaboration on this. Uddhava is apparently challenging Krishna's words, right? However, we need to understand the mood of Uddhava. Apparently someone may be challenging, externally someone may be challenging, but internally his mood is submissiveness, Uddhava's mood. On the other hand, if you see the example of Hiranyakashipu, externally he was submissive to Brahmaji to get certain benedictions, but internally he was rebellious, right? Externally demon may perform so many austerities to please Lord Shiva and get some benedictions, but internally he wants to kill Shiva only. Internally he wants to get the wife of Shiva only. So these are the natures of divine and demoniac people. Right? Here Uddhava is challenging the words of Krishna only to understand the subject matter more deeply and only to make other people, all the readers of Bhagavatam, understand the subject matter better. Right? So because someone just reads this, he may not even have the intelligence to raise this kind of question also. Uddhava is raising this question on all our behalf. Right? So that is the mood in which Uddhava is inquiring. And more elaboration is given in the next 5 verses. What is the mood and purpose of Uddhava's inquiry? So here in this particular verse Uddhava says, Guna dosha drishir dosho guna tubhya vivarjitaha. That's what Krishna said in the previous chapter. So one has to transcend this material piety and impiety, good and bad, good and evil. So I want to clarify how one can transcend the activities recommended in Vedas. You are asking us to transcend this material good and bad, but they are recommendations of Vedas. Means you are asking us to transcend the recommendations of Vedas. How are we supposed to understand this? That's why Uddhava is asking this question. Second, Varanashrama vikalpamcha pratiloma anulotmajam dravyadesha vayah kalan svargam narakamevacha.
According to the Vedic literature, the superior and inferior varieties found in the human social system, Varanashram, are due to pious and sinful modes of family planning. Thus, piety and sin are constant points of reference in the Vedic analysis of the components of a given situation, namely the material ingredients, place, age and time. Indeed, the Vedas reveal the existence of material heaven and hell, which are certainly based on piety and sin.
So, in the ordinary conduction of our duties, right, in a regular following of certain duties, there is a reference point, that is Vedas. Right, the entire Vedic society, human society, would run with these reference points. What is sin? What is piety? What is impious? What is pious? Right, what is good? What is bad? So there is a reference point. So if I go this direction, it will be wrong. If I go in this direction, that is right. So there is a reference point. How are we supposed to transcend this? Right? So Vedas reveal the existence of material heaven and hell, so which are certainly based on piety and sin. So please elaborate more on this. For example, there is a thing called Varanashrama and Pratiloma. Pratiloma Anulomajam. Pratiloma means marriage between two different categories, different classes of man and woman. For example, a Brahmana lady marries a Kshatriya boy. Right? What is the example? Devayani married Yayati. Right? That is not a regular system. Generally, Kshatriyas marry Kshatriyas. Right? Brahmanas marry Brahmanas. So that is called Pratiloma system. Pratiloma combination of a superior woman to inferior man. Generally, a superior man can marry an inferior woman, but a superior woman cannot marry inferior man. Right? So because wife is supposed to be taking guidance of a husband, the husband himself is inferior in qualities and caste and character, etc., then she cannot get proper guidance. So that kind of marriages are not very much encouraged. Right? So these are all certain things. So Anuloma, Pratiloma, Ambasta, there are so many things which are explained in the purport. So these are all Vedic recommendations. Now see the conclusion of the purport. In any case, the entire Vedic social system is based on distinguishing between piety and sin. And Sri Uddhava is encouraging the Lord to explain more elaborately his statement that one should transcend both piety and sin. So Uddhava is making his arguments stronger. Right? Even Arjuna was also questioning Krishna. There will be Varna Sankara. Right? There will be Varna Sankara means a mixture of incompatible mixture of man and woman. Incompatible association or union of man and woman. So what is incompatible? What is not recommended in Vedas? Kshatriya marrying a Brahmana or a Brahmana marrying a Sudra. So these are all incompatible matches. Right? So more about this can be found in Puranjana section also. In 4th canto, ending chapters. So Anga married Sunita. Right? So Sunita had a bad quality. That's why the result is Veena. So when marriage is taking place, one needs to consider the qualities of boy and girl, and astrological calculations also should match, then the marriage will be successful. If there is somebody is of inferior quality, there is no proper match, then this kind of things will happen. So all these are recommended in Vedas. How are you saying that you have to deny the we have to transcend these principles or injunctions of Vedas? That is Uddhava's question. Third verse. Gunadosha bhida drishtim antarena vachastava nishreyasam katham drunam nishedha vidhilakshanam.
Without seeing the difference between piety and sin, how can one understand your own instructions in the form of Vedic literatures, which order one to act piously and forbid one to act as sinfully? Furthermore, without such authorized Vedic literatures, which ultimately award liberation, how can human beings achieve the perfection of life?
So, how without Vedas, how can even achieve liberation? Right? So, the Uddhava's question is like kind of rephrased in the small purport here. If one does not accept the necessity of performing pious activities and avoiding sinful activities, it becomes very difficult to understand the authorized religious scriptures. And without scriptures, how can anyone attain salvation? Okay, you are recommending that you have to transcend this good and bad business. Then they are referred to religious scriptures. They are explained in the Vedic scriptures. Means you are asking us to neglect the injunctions of Vedas that discriminate between material piety and impiety. If you reject the Vedas only, where is the scope of attaining liberation or salvation? So that is the question. Fourth question, Uddhava says, even demigods, pitris, human beings, everyone should follow Vedas. That is the fourth verse. Pitruteva manushyanam Vedas chakshustaveshvara Shreyastvanu palabdhete Sadhya sadhana yorapi.
My dear Lord, in order to understand those things beyond direct experience, such as spiritual liberation or attainment of heaven or other material enjoyments beyond our present capacity, and in general to understand the means and end of all things, the forefathers, demigods and human beings must consult the Vedic literatures, which are your own laws. For these constitute the highest evidence and revelation.
Vedas are the highest evidence and revelation. Right? They describe both means and end. Sadhya, sadhana, all these are mentioned in the Vedas, Vedic literatures. Then even demigods, forefathers, they all consult this Vedic literatures. So how are we supposed to, overpower them, overrule them? Although the demigods are all powerful in awarding material benedictions to inferior species, they are sometimes thwarted in their personal programs for sensory gratification. Yeah, this is another thing. The concept is denied. Even the demigods and forefathers have at best an ambiguous conception of supreme liberation, and even in material affairs they are subject to personal frustration. So without Vedic directions, even demigods and pitris cannot conduct themselves properly. That's what is mentioned here. So they also need to consult the Vedas, Vedic standards. Even Indra also has to consult the Vedic standards. He has to do certain sacrifices for purification. He has to do some Ashwamedha, some yajnas recommended by Brihaspati. We read in 6th canto, 14th chapter. Right? There is the concept of sin and piety for him also. Sin personified in the form of a woman with tuberculosis, old woman, was aging, and later he did some sacrifice, and then Sages reinstated him in the position of the king of heaven. So even demigods also act according to the directions of the Vedas, which are words of God. Right? But Krishna was actually, when he was saying transcend this material good and bad on material platform, he meant pure devotional service. That is the whole purpose of this chapter. Right? So he is speaking in a realm beyond this material universe, the functionings of this material universe. But Uddhava is bringing the discussion to a level where this universe is functioning, this material world is functioning, right? So that, normal people can understand. It's not that Uddhava is at this level, he's having some basic questions. Uddhava is a Nitya Siddha. By the order or desire of Krishna, Uddhava is inspired to ask this kind of questions, right? So, yeah, this one example is given. How even demigods also have to consult Vedas, and they also, get frustrations in their attempts for sense gratification. A rich businessman is there. He may not have a difficulty in dealing with his employees or workers. But sometimes he will have difficulty with his family members. Right? Similarly, demigods also may have some frustrations. Right? They may award benedictions to some demons who are doing tapasya for them. But they themselves have their own problems. Right? So, if such fabulous entities as demigods must take shelter of the Vedas, we can just imagine the position of human beings who are frustrated at virtually every step of their life. The demigods have to act according to the consultation of Vedas, or to speak of human beings. Right? So, fifth verse. They need to follow these Vedic directions. They also need to discriminate good and bad on a material level. That's what Uddhava says. Guna dosha bhida drishtir nigamate nahiswata nigamena bhivadascha bhidaya itiha brahma.
My dear Lord, the distinction observed between the piety and sin comes from your own Vedic knowledge, does not arise by itself. If the same Vedic literature subsequently nullifies such distinction between piety and sin, there will certainly be confusion.
So Uddhava is requesting to remove this confusion. In the previous verse, Uddhava said that is substantiating this point. Even elevated beings also consult Vedas. Then Vedas are the best source of information. Then they also, by referring to them, we can understand what is sadhya and sadhana that he mentioned in the fourth verse. In the fifth verse, he is saying, I am confused with this understanding which I presented in these four verses compared to what you spoke at the end of your previous chapter. So there is some contradiction I can see. Please elaborate, remove this confusion. Right? If I accept the Vedas and I reject your order, or if I accept your order and reject the Vedas, I see some kind of irony, some kind of discrepancy here. Because whatever you speak is Vedas. And Vedas is whatever you spoke. Right? If I just accept what you spoke now and reject Vedas, that doesn't mean that I am following you. Because Vedas are also coming from you. And if I accept Vedas and reject what you spoke now, then that also means that I am not following you. So it seems there is a contradiction between what Vedas are speaking and what you are speaking. So he wants to resolve this confusion. Very beautifully this purport elaborates the purpose of Uddhava's questions. So why Uddhava is bringing up this kind of discussion? I'll read some selective lines from the purport that will give the gist. So the material world gives the living entities a chance to satisfy their perverted desires and at the same time gradually achieve liberation. Right? Thus material piety must be considered a means and not an absolute end. So one has to act according to Vedic injunctions that speak about material piety and impiety. One has to conduct himself on the pious path, not on the impious path. That is needed. Because ultimately Vedas are meant to bring person to the point of liberation. Right? But the highest definitions of piety are these. Piety and impiety, highest definitions that are given in these lines. Those persons and activities that please the Lord are considered to be virtuous. Second, those that displease Him are to be considered sinful. So these are the supreme definitions. Whatever pleases Krishna is pious. Whatever displeases Krishna is impious. Right? These are the ultimate definitions. All others are secondary definitions. Right? If Krishna tells Yudhishthira Maharaj, you can speak a lie. That is the highest piety. Right? There is no impiety involved there. So Krishna is speaking on that platform. Now why this kind of confusion is raised by Uddhava here? There is great fear among moralists that if the distinction between piety and sin is minimized, people will commit many atrocities in the name of God. Now Krishna is saying in the end of the previous chapter that transcend this material good and evil. Right? Give up these conceptions of material piety and impiety. Then, taking this instruction from Krishna, some ordinary whimsical people might do anything and quote Krishna there. Getting right? So that is one concern that Uddhava had. Second, in the modern world there is no clear understanding of spiritual authority, and modern men consider any appeal to transcend morality to be an invitation to fanatism, anarchy, violence and corruption. Thus they regard material moral principles as more important than directly trying to please God. These are two extreme cases that Uddhava is referring to. What are the two extreme cases? First one is, people might quote Krishna and say that we have nothing to do with this material piety and impiety. We will do whatever we want. In the name of God, we will do whatever we want whimsically. Second case is, some people might give more prominence to this ordinary moral codes only and give up this important principle of pleasing God, pleasing Krishna. They are too strict in this, too much adherence to Vedic principles and complete rejection of Vedic principles. These are the two extreme cases. Right? So some extreme people might take your words in that light. So please, I want elaboration. Got right? The purpose of Uddhava's question. Now the sixth verse. Krishna. Aniyamagraha, aniyamagraha. Correct. So now we will... Yeah, once Radhika Vallabhra was explaining this and he made some nice points. He gave nice examples. Morality is like a helium balloon and Krishna consciousness is like a thread that... ties that balloon. If the thread is cut off, it just goes away. So what is the problem with sticking to Vedic standards of piety and impiety and then walking on a pious path only? As long as you walk on pious path and have the conceptions of ordinary morality only, without reference to Krishna consciousness, so you will go nowhere. You're just roaming all over. Right? So it has to be tied with Krishna consciousness. And moral principles are like pearls. And Krishna consciousness is like thread, right, that holds all those moral principles. So without Krishna consciousness, all these good qualities have not much value. Like that. It's not that Krishna is giving any license to break the moral principles, right? One can practice bhakti, at the same time follow moral principles. It's not that one cannot practice bhakti if he doesn't compromise on moral principles, right? One can practice bhakti and moral principle, following the moral principles is also needed, but they are not all in all, right? Or by simply following moral principles and not following bhakti will not give him the highest perfection also. So these are two things which should go together. Now Krishna is responding. Very systematic answer. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Yogastrayo Maya Prokta Runam Shreyo Vihitsaya Jnanam Karma Cha Bhaktischa Nopayonyostikatrachit.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, because I desire that human beings may achieve perfection, I have presented three paths of advancement: the path of knowledge, the path of work, and the path of devotion."
Path of knowledge is jnana. Path of work is karma. Path of devotion is bhakti. Third line. Jnana, karma, bhakti. I gave three primary divisions or processes for elevation of the human society. Yes, please.
Besides these three, there is absolutely no other means of elevation.
These three are the main things, right? So, why Krishna is giving three processes here? Why not one? Why not he say bhakti only? I gave three processes for elevation. You can say, I gave one process. We know, with our understanding so far of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, and spending time in Krishna consciousness, bhakti is there. But three are given here. Because ultimately, the goal of philosophical speculation or this karma process, path of regulated or religious work, and bhakti, the goal of these three processes is same, Krishna consciousness. Where else this kind of concept comes? This is a beautiful concept. Where the goal of jnanam, karma and bhakti, all three lead to the same, all three, not lead to, but to say the purpose of all three is the same. Narayana Smriti. Right? How does it begin, that verse? Etavan Sankhya Yogyabhyam Sadharma Parinishtaya Janmalabha Parapumsam Antya Narayana. That is Varnashtam. Preetarna Yavad Mayo Asudeve. Correct. And quite prominently, all these references are nice. Quite prominently, so our Kapil Dev also says in 3rd canto, 32nd chapter. Right? What we achieve by karma or jnana or bhakti is same, Krishna. But what we achieve by through karma or jnana, especially this jnana or yoga, jnana yoga, he was saying jnana, yoga and bhakti, right? Is Krishna only, but not complete Krishna. What is that verse? First canto, second chapter, 11th verse. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam vidnana vadnayam. From Heti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Kishabdhute. Once our His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj came to Jeevi 4-5 years back, and then he gave a presentation on this verse. Vadanti tat tattva vidas. He was giving an example of train. So when train comes, he used to use this train example to convince people about Bhagavan, Paramatma and Brahman. In his days of preaching, initial days when Prabhupada was there, he was in. So it was a train is coming. From a distance, you will see some object is moving towards you. That is Brahman realization. Right? When the bright light. Light or smoke, something will come in those days. Now electric trains, not so much smoke will come. But when the train comes on the platform, you are standing on the platform and train is just coming there. You will see some details, some dabbas, this and that are there. So that is like Paramatma realization. Once you enter the train, sit in your bogey, you have your co-passengers, you have your birth number, and there is a fan, light, etc. That is Bhagavan realization. Right? So ultimately, whether you are standing on the platform or whether you are when you are watching the train, by standing on the platform or watching the train from quite a far distance or entering the train, you are seeing the train only. Right? Everyone is watching the train only. But depending on where he is situated, how far from the train he is situated, he is getting different aspects of the train, different facets of the train. Similarly, if we approach Krishna through mental speculation, we will see only impersonal Brahma. If we approach Krishna through some yogic meditation, you will see him only as Paramatma. If we approach Krishna through bhakti, devotional service that involves these nine processes, then we will see the personal form of Krishna. Right? But by all these processes, we are aiming at the one person only. Aiming at one person only. Right? So even to get into a devotional perspective of this kind of variegated approaches towards Krishna, varieties of approach ultimately culminating in Krishna only, we have the seventh canto, first chapter. What is it? Kamad, Dveshad, Bhayad, Snehad. Gopyad, that's an example. So by any of these means, either Kama or Dvesha or Bhaya or Sneha, whatever, affection, you will attain Krishna only. Right? If you think of Krishna by any of these means, in anger or in envy or in lust or whatever, you will attain Krishna. But that attaining of Krishna is different. Yashodamayi, you know, has Krishna. And who is that? Putana also attained Krishna. But the attainment of Yashodamayi and Putana are different. Right? Because the difference here is, it sounds exciting. Aray, whatever you do, you will attain Krishna only. That may sound a little exciting. Oh, I'll do jnana also, yoga also. But the point there is, what facet of Krishna, what aspect of Krishna are you attaining? So Putana became motherly nurse only. Right? It's not like she's getting into pure Vatsala Rasa as good as Yashodamayi. Right? So attaining Krishna means what aspect of Krishna you attain. That is most important. Right? So we discussed elaborately in the seventh canto, first chapter. So here also something similar is coming. By karma, jnana and bhakti, the goal of all these processes is Krishna consciousness only. Same thing, Prabhupada gives this popular example of milk. You can approach milk through any of the senses. If you approach milk through nose, you will get the fragrance only. If you approach milk through ears, you will get some glories of the milk only. You know, protected cow milk or whatever, you know, packet milk or powder milk, whatever, ahimsa milk. If you approach milk through eyes, you will see some white substance. If you approach milk through your touch, it's cold or hot, that only you will understand. But if you approach milk through your tongue, you will get nourished. Whole body will be nourished. So that is the bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is like drinking milk. So karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, all these are like touching milk or hearing about milk or seeing milk. It's like that. So, yeah, but ultimate aim is Krishna consciousness only. Ultimately, your senses are interacting with milk only. Okay? The maximum benefit out of milk is derived by drinking milk. So the three authorized processes together in order to, Krishna is describing three authorized processes in order to emphasize that their ultimate goal is one. In the second canto also, we have several processes are mentioned. Ashtanga Yoga, Virat Roop Worship, Paramatma Meditation, Krama Mukti. You see, you have that popular chat, right? Second canto, first three chapters summarized in that one chat. Krama Mukti, going through this. Ultimately, it's like liberation only. So all these processes are discussed, and Sukadeva Goswami nicely, the demigod worship or whatever, everything, all the processes he describes on the Vedic landscape, and all of them are binding together and leading towards bhakti and Krishna and Krishna bhakti only. Right? The ultimate process, they all have to culminate in bhakti. Then only one can attain highest perfection. The word trayaha or three indicates that Despite their ultimate oneness of purpose, the three paths display diversity in progress and achievement. This is a very key line. Trayaha. If the purpose of three different things is one, why there are three different things? That is mentioned here. Three indicates that despite their ultimate oneness in purpose, the three paths display diversity in progress and achievement. The achievement of all three is not one. Okay. So one cannot achieve the same result by mere speculation or piety. That one achieves by directly surrendering to the Supreme Lord. Another statement Chakravartipada makes in the 7th canto. That which is forcefully given to someone and that which is eagerly attained are different. Devotees may get liberation and demons also may get liberation. But liberation is forced upon the demons out of mercy. And but devotees, liberation is, you know, very liberation in the sense, like I'm telling, service, not the impersonal liberation and all that. So it is attained like that. The demons are not eager for that liberation, but it was given to them to give them some relief, like that. So depending on one cannot achieve the same result by mere speculation or piety that one achieves by directly surrendering to the Supreme Lord, depending completely on His mercy and friendship. Okay. So here karma refers to work dedicated to Krishna. Ignarthat karmanon yatra lokoyam karma bandhana. Okay. Next. Then 7th verse. So now 6th verse Krishna said there are three primary divisions for elevation. That is karma, bhakti and jnana. Okay, three things. Now in the 7th verse he gives the qualifications for karma yoga and jnana yoga. Nirvinnanam jnana yogo Nyasinam iha karmasu Tveshva nirvinna jittanam Karma yogastu kaminam.
Among these three paths, Jnana Yoga, the path of philosophical speculation, is recommended for those who are disgusted with material life and are thus detached from ordinary fruitive activities.
So what is the qualification for Jnana Yoga? Detachment. Disgust of all material activities. That is the qualification for Jnana Yoga. Next.
Those who are not disgusted with material life, having many desires yet to fulfill, should seek perfection through the path of karma.
So, this is for attached people. Karma, Jnana Yoga is for detached people, Karma Yoga is for attached people. So, Nirvinnanam, and that is Anirvinnanam, not completely frustrated. So, these are the two different paths. So, different propensities that lead human beings to adopt different processes of perfection. So, it's there is a variegatedness in the practitioners. Right? Because there are different practitioners, there are different processes. The other day we were discussing. Because different people have different desires to eat, a restaurant has different menu, different dishes there. Why there should be 1,000 items in this restaurant? Because different kinds of people will come there to eat. Right? So Krishna also has to provide, right? According to the level of audience. You don't find all this karma yoga, jnana yoga in the spiritual world. There are only bhakti yogis there. Okay, there is no super soul meditators, there are no impersonalist meditators, there are no Virata worshippers in the spiritual world. There are only devotees there. Right? But here, all these are needed. They have an end, all these processes. They are not eternal processes. They are existing only in this material creation. Then, 8th verse. Yeah, some elaboration is given in the purport. You can study. 8th verse. Yadrichayamat kathadav Jata shraddhastu yah puman Nanirvinno nati shakto Bhakti yoga asya siddhida Yadrichayamat kathasu Tadav Jata shraddhastu yah puman Nanirvinno nati sapto Bhakti yoga asya siddhida.
If somehow or other, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me.
So what are the qualifications for bhakti yoga? Earlier, two qualifications for jnana yoga and karma yoga are given. Attachment and detachment. Here, not too much attachment, not too much detachment. A balance. That is required for bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is balance. So, there, yadrichaya mat kathadav. So, mat kathadav jata shraddha. Means this, the person who is qualified for bhakti yoga will have faith in hearing about Krishna. Mat kathadav jata shraddha. He will have faith in the process of hearing and chanting Krishna's glories. Then na anirvinnu, na nirvinnu, he is not too much disgusted with material life, not too much detached. Then na atishaktu, not too much attached. So these are the two qualifications for a practitioner of bhakti yoga. If somehow or other one gets the association of pure devotees of the Lord and hears from them the transcendental message of Krishna, then one has the chance to become a devotee of the Lord. So, a bhakti yogi is not an extremist. He doesn't go to extremes. Too much attachment, too much detachment. So, and he has interest in hearing Krishna katha. And how does that interest comes? How does that faith comes? By association of devotees. So, actually the whole thing is summarized here. Faith in Krishna katha in the association of devotees. This is the aspiration of all the great devotees. Bhaktim mahu pravahatam tvayime prasango bhuyad ananta mahatam amalashayanam. So, Dhruvamara says, I just want association of your devotees and I want to discuss Krishna katha and association of devotees. That's how I cross this material world. Right? Prithumara says the same thing. Then Pracheta says the same thing. And Rutrasura says the same thing. So these are the important aspirations of devotees. They are the qualification of devotees. See the last lines of this purport. He does not desire to pursue ordinary material existence any further, but it cannot avoid real, because it cannot avoid real happiness. A candidate for devotional service does not give up all hope for perfecting personal existence. A person who avoids the two extremes of material attachment and impersonal reaction. See, someone who is too detached, he will become an impersonalist eventually. Right? He has no personal conception only. Detachment is his ekamatra lakshya. Right? I have to be detached from everything. He will become impersonal. Right? He will be detached from every object, every person, everything in this entire creation. Means he is impersonal. There is no conception of personalism only. So, too much detachment will lead one to impersonalism. But one needs little detachment. Right? That is balance. A person who avoids two extremes of material attachment and impersonal reaction to material attachment, and who somehow or other gets the association of pure devotees, faithfully hearing their message, is a good candidate for going back to Godhead. So the last one sentence is the essence of this verse. Now, ninth verse. I mean, everyone cannot come to this stage. Right? Eighth verse is describing the highest stage where one has faith in Krishna katha and balanced attachment and detachment. Then till one comes to that stage, what one has to do? One cannot immediately come to that stage. What one has to do, that is given in ninth verse. Tavat karmani kurvita nanirvidyeta yavata matkatha srevana dhuva shraddhayavan najayate.
As long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions.
Now Krishna is answering the question. What did Uddhava say? You are saying give up this Vedic good and bad, Vedic rules that discriminate between material good and bad. So, Krishna clarifies here, if you are not on the level of 8th verse, till that time you have to follow this Vedic good and bad, Vedic rules and regulations. Tavat karmani kurvita. One has to act according to these fruitive activities. Nanirvidyeta yavata. till the time one is not situated on this position. What is that position? Mat katha sravanadova shraddha yavanna jayate. Till someone has not developed faith in just hearing Krishna katha, he has to follow the protocols of the Vedic system. If you remember, this verse is quoted in 5th canto. Any guesses? Any recollections? Bharat Maharaj. Sacrifices. 5th canto, 7th chapter, 6th verse. Purport Chakravartipad writes this. He quotes this verse and says, if one has developed faith in hearing and chanting of Krishna Katha, then he need not do all these karmakandic rituals. Bharat Maharaj has already developed this faith in hearing and chanting. Why he is involved in karmakandic Vedic rituals? Right? Sacrifices, etc. Chakravartipad very systematically gives the purport. You know, he says, when this Indraya Swaha, Chandraya Swaha, Varunaya Swaha, all these are done, our Bharat Maharaj is meditating on various limbs of Lord Vasudeva. His apparent karmakandic ritual is pure devotional service. Because he is Krishna conscious. Right? To the eyes of the outside world, he is doing some karmakandic ritual, but internally his mood is devotional. Like that. This is a nice, important verse. 8th and 9th, both are important verses. Unless one has developed firm faith in Lord Krishna by association with pure devotees and is thus engaged full-time in devotional service of the Lord, one should not neglect ordinary Vedic principles and duties. In fact, in a devotional mood, correct. One should not violate the injunctions of Srutis and Smritis, right? It's like violating Krishna's will only, because Sruti, Smriti, all are coming into existence by Krishna's will only. So if one violates this Sruti and Smriti and claim to be Krishna's devotee, he is not actually a Vaishnava, this verse says, right? Actually, a devotee, even if he is on the level of this Matkatha Shravanadavva, Jata Shraddha, even if he is on that level, he will not violate the Vedic rituals and other Vedic obligations. Vritrasar, when he was dying, he would say, I have to clear my debt to Tvashta's son, who is there, my brother, Vishwarup. Right? Even Daksha, recently we were discussing in junior batch, just 3-4 days back, 6.5. So Daksha cursed Narada Muni. Daksha was accusing Narada Muni, saying that you are sin personified. Why? Because you have converted my immature young boys into sadhus, into renunciants. Right? They have not cleared these three debts to the sages and to the demigods and to Pitris. Right? One has to clear the debts to Pitris by babygetting children. One has to clear the debts to sages by following celibacy. One has to clear the debts to demigods by performing Vedic rituals. Now they cannot do all these three. You have directly sent them into, renounced order. How can they do all these three? So, here, there he says, Sruti, Smriti, why did I say this? This link? One has to fulfill. So one who is dedicated to one who has dedicated to this devotional service of Krishna, he need not. He is beyond all that. So when Narada Muni gave them bhakti, he gave them jnana and vairagya, and he automatically cleared all those debts. This verse is there. Devarshi bhutatranam pitrunam. So one who is dedicated to Mukunda, he is not obliged to follow all these karmakandic rituals. But a devotee, out of his natural humility, he thinks that I am still under debts. Right, but technically speaking, he is beyond all debts, according to this verse. Right? Vritrasur. Vritrasur felt that I have to clear my debt to my brother by killing you. already pure devotee, still out of his humility he feels that Vedic obligation. Although he is, he need not be obliged. Devotee has some point.
Actually, sometimes practically question here. Sometimes some devotees, they are initiated from so many times and very senior in temple. But in their community, suppose they are Kuldevata in that side, Karwar, Karnataka, that area there is very prominent of Kuldevata and so many things. So they are, to please their families and their community, they are doing in their house. They are initiated, they are Ganpati Puja or some other Devi Devata Puja. So in that cases, we should allow them or what they should do.
Earlier we had this verse, I think this is where I answered. Prudhi, please, can you please answer?
Sometimes devotees in ISKCON temple, they...
The family has, culturally, they have some demigod worship, etc.
I heard from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj once, he said that in case they are doing some demigod yajna and all at home, to not hurt their sentiments, you participate. But you know, heart of hearts, you know that demigods are only limbs of the Deva Narayanangaja. You know that from Srimad Bhagavatam, he said. Similarly, Paramahansa Radhakrishnan also, he went to a house where one devotee literally cried. He said, Maharaj, Radha Gopinath I have kept in the center in a small photo. And there were 40-50 other photos of different demigods and all, which are worshipped by his mother, father and all. It's a joint family. So when Maharaj had gone to that house, and Maharaj said, see, for you, Radha Gopinath are everything, you know. And they are, fortunately, they are in the center also. So you see them, you don't worry about others. You can understand all others are dependent on them. Okay. In another house, Maharaj told, he was a little more having freedom. So Maharaj, but he had to keep the demigods in the altar. He can't take it out. So what can I do? So Maharaj said, you keep Radha Gopinath, the demigods can be on the sides, like we do Hariharaya Nama, we do, you know, like that on the sides. You can keep them like this. So then in another house, Maharaj said, in Akrur Prabhu's house, when Maharaj went, he said, you put all the demigods in one, he had put one this thing, potlam kind of thing, you know. And then he asked Maharaj, what should I do with this? He asked. And Maharaj said, either give it away to relatives, or you can do Jala Visarjan, you can do also. So of course for three different people, he said according to their circumstances and everything like that. So in your, when we go to family, in order to be respectful to parents, we don't hurt their sentiments, because in India they have a lot of religious sentiments. But it's not equivalent to somebody wholeheartedly participating in that demigod yajna, you know. If a devotee is not very advanced, then he may get little confused. Then he goes, who is supreme? Is demigod Shiva supreme or Krishna supreme? But those are fixed up. For them to take part wouldn't be so damaging. Like that, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj.
Basically, we understand that Aradhyo Bhagavan Rajeshataneya Taddham Vrindavanam, these are our five worshipable things as Mahaprabhu recommended, but not to hurt sentiments and whatever little bit we can participate in those events, not to please them. There, the
doing some, you know, shraddha or something just to please the parents, or participating in some demigod rituals.
Advaita Acharya did some shraddha ceremony. Then
he gave to Haridas Thakur.
Krishna himself did some demigod worship and all that. In his tenth canto, correct.
In the daily activities.
Daily activities. Yeah.
Qualification is needed. Anyone can chant and gradually all the qualities will be done. I don't understand this.
This also. Advaita Acharya.
Bhakti yoga is not too much attachment or detachment, But generally we hear that for bhakti there is no qualification needed. Anyone can chant here gradually.
Why this is said here? Bhakti involves emotion. That's why the attachment is required. The material attachment will eventually become transformed into loving emotion for Krishna, devotional emotion. Our Navagindra Maharaj used to say, if you have no emotion, you have no devotion. If you have no devotion, only commotion. He used to say like that. So bhakti requires emotion also. At the same time, if the emotion pins us down on a material platform, we get stuck. And the other one is the disgust is also criticized by Rupa Goswami Pad in NOD, 14th chapter. You know, there he says that if somebody develops too much disgust, he will become so disgusted that even he'll be detached from Krishna also. You know, so that is why he doesn't prescribe it as one of the limbs of 64 items. Varnashrama is not there in that. Like that, what is the other one? Renunciation. There are 3-4 things he mentions there in 14th chapter which are all not there. So excessive disgust leads to impersonalism, and excessive attachment keeps one in the material world. But bhakti is a combination of both. We have some amount of vairagya also, and we have emotion of the bhakti also, the combination. That's why this verse is like this.
And more of this.
Actually, it's very difficult for us to know whether we are too much detached or too much attached. Actually, if we are from the outcome of our behavior, for example, we are seeing in this world that even when somebody comes to the path of bhakti, they are carried away by the current of maya. Due to too much attachment, people go away. Correct, no? And those people who have some amount of jnana and vairagya, they understand that maya is bad, you know, it causes pain. You know, they stay on. Similarly, those who are impersonalistic approach, those who have, if they are very bold, very confident about their own buddhi, they think they are too smart. I can remember one boy came in 1994 to Chaupati temple to join. He was one of my friends. We both used to come to Chaupati, but then he went and joined one Mayavadi organization. He didn't come because, you know, he could not develop faith and love in the personality of Godhead, you know, the personal form. Rather, he was overconfident about his impersonalistic approach, and he had a over-disgust also. Over-disgust towards everything. See, the raga and dvesha, both have to be transcended for bhakti. Raga, dvesha, vimuktaistu, vishyanindrishya, atma vashyar, vidheyatma, prasadamadikatya. And then prasadesavadukkanam, hanirasupajayate, prasanna chetrasoshi hi ashu, buddhi pariyavatishyate. There he talks about bhakti. Nasti buddhi rayuktasya, nachayuktasya bhavana. Without making your buddhi yukta in bhakti, how can you have bhavana? Nacha bhavayata shantir, ashantasya kuthasukam. Those three verses also begin with raga dvesha giving up. Like, you know, Dhruva Maharaj was getting into dvesha platform when he saw the yakshas. So it was very dangerous. And Dhritarashtra was getting into raga platform. And Vidura pulled him out. So raga and dvesha are two extremes. When we go to either of the extreme, we don't get the end result of bhakti. So, but if one focuses by withdrawing from these two on Krishna, then one transcends. So, and my understanding of this, Govind Prabhu was once telling this story. You know, one fellow went to one guru's ashram, and he told, "My wife is dead, so I want to join." And guru asked him, "Oh, you didn't cry?" He said, "No, I never cried."
Marry again.
Then guru said, "Marry again, develop some attachment." He was telling. You know. So this he says that one should, Prabhupada says, affection is a symptom of the soul, and one who has no affection is a stone, Prabhupada says. In Kunti Maharani's, one of the, that Dridam Pandushu Vishnishu, that was, no? Mm-hmm. The purport, yeah. But the affection should be spiritualized. When it is spiritualized, then we progress. But if somebody doesn't have affection, that means probably he is overly disgusted.
Hare Krishna.
So, just one point I want to add, that it is equally important that we respect, we don't disrespect the demigods. because when we understand as devotees, we understand that they are the limbs of the Lord, so we should offer full respects to them, and in this process we can get their mercy. If it is not that if we happen to come across a temple of Lord Shiva, we just neglect it. Adagund Maharaj very clearly said that we should bow down, pay your respects, and beg for the mercy, so that we can progress in our Krishna consciousness. So this also aspect we have to see, because there is one incident in Srimad Bhagavatam, and Dhruva Maharaj was very angry with the and at that time Kubera came, and Kubera asked Dhruva Maharaj, "What do you want? I want to give you something." So Dhruva Maharaj was very surprised that I'm killing his men, and now he is coming and he wants to give me. So the Acharya says that Kubera wanted to give because Dhruva Maharaj has attained the Supreme Lord and he is a devotee. So then Dhruva Maharaj came to his senses and he said, "Please give me benediction that I never fell into this situation, and I even for a moment I don't forget Lord Krishna." So Kubera granted him that benediction. So we can understand that it is very surprising that demigod like Kubera can grant such a benediction to Dhruva Maharaj. It's very surprising. But so we should understand that these demigods are in the management of the Supreme Lord. So they are in a sense devotees. Like Indra and other, they are in a sense they are devotees. Like we understand that Lord is always present in so many other lokas. In Indra's abode as well. So we have to be very respectful to them. Radha Govind Maharaj in Hindi mein kehta hai ki sanmanya sabhi hai lekin bhajan keval Krishna ka karna hai. Hare Krishna. Bhajan ya keval Krishna hai.
Thank you.
May gods tell Muchukunda that we cannot avoid you liberation. Rite Kaivalyam, they say. But how Kubera was able to offer pure devotional service to Dhruva is still a mystery for me. Mm-hmm. In case you had a book.
Actually, I also had this question only when I was reading. But His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj says that blessings are beyond the capacity of the giver also. The good wishes, the well wishes of Kubera will definitely bestow benediction upon Dhruva. Right? So Maharaj said in a different context, but this Brahmanas were giving benedictions to our Bali Maharaj, and he conquered Indra. Right? Prahlad Maharaj gave benediction to Bali Maharaj, and he conquered Indra in the 8th canto, 17th chapter. Right? Bali, not so much to get material opulence, but to get pure devotional service only, ultimately. And in that context, Maharaj gave a full class on blessings of great souls. So, when here, in... was ultimately to give him pure devotion service. Yeah. And Maharaj was mainly emphasizing that blessings are beyond the capacity of the giver also. His good wishes. He is pleased with that devotee so much, and he wishes well for him, and Krishna will fulfill the desire.
Actually, Krishna keeps the words of those devotees. Mm. Just like in the case of when Nalkuvir and Manigri were delivered, and so Krishna told that I am doing this only because my devotee Narada has given a benediction.
Narada Muni is on a higher level compared to Nalkuvir and Manigri. Yeah. Here Kubera, in terms of his devotion, is on a lower level compared to Dhruva. Because Dhruva was already predestined to go back to Godhead, told by Vishnu himself. But still his good wishes will help him.
So Krishna keeps the words of Kubera, that yes, and Dhruva will get that thing.
Yeah. Okay, 10th verse. So 10th and 11th verses, the destination of such a devotee. Nishkama karma devotee who does his prescribed duty properly and works for Krishna, such a person's destination is mentioned in 10 and 11 verses. 10. Swadharmastho yajan yajnair अनाशी हि काम उद्धव नयाति स्वर्ग नरकौ यद्यन्यं न समाचरेत. One more small point related to the earlier thing, taking blessings of everyone. So Maharaj also said many times, like, he was very eager to take the blessings of that leper lady, right? So actually Maharaj mentions that we need blessings of everyone, even parents also, relatives also, friends also. So actually Yudhishthira Maharaj, although he is a pure devotee, he was so eager to collect blessings from everyone. Drona is, according to pure devotional level is concerned, Yudhishthira is much on a higher level compared to Drona. But Yudhishthira was eager to take blessings of Drona also, eager to take blessings of everyone. So that nature of seeking blessings from everyone and the good wishes of all those people will ultimately, get the favor of Krishna towards the devotee, right? Blessings of, correct, all the sages go there. It's not that always one who is a superior person only can bless, Okay, please read the translation of 10th chapter, 10th verse.
My dear Uddhav, a person who is situated in his prescribed duty, properly worshipping by Vedic sacrifices, but not desiring the fruitive result of such worship, will not go to the heavenly planets. Similarly, by not performing forbidden activities, he will not go to hell.
Next, 11th verse. Both are similar. Asmilloke vartamana swadharmasto angata suchihi jnanam vishuddham apnoti madbhaktim va idruchhayam.
One who is situated in his prescribed duty, free from sinful activities and cleansed of material contamination, in this very life obtains transcendental knowledge or, by fortune, devotional service unto me.
So what Krishna is saying here is, such a person will never go to hell nor heaven. Right? So, because he does not perform forbidden activities, so he will not go to hell. And he is not performing any worship or anything for fruitive results, he will not go to heaven. And his performance like this, his non-performance of forbidden activities and his performance of good activities only, is spontaneous. He is not conscious. Oh, I will do this and I will get that, I will do this and I will not get this. It's not like that. It's spontaneously doing only good. Right? So, yeah, he avoids all kind of material rewards and material punishments. Such a desireless person can be promoted to the platform of pure devotional service. If one is like that, he can like that. And if one somehow or other gets the association of pure devotees and hears from him faithfully, then one can achieve Krishna consciousness. So association part is very much emphasized. Although many of those qualities are discussed, right? Having interest to hear about Krishna, then not so much detachment, not too much attachment. But association is a key element for one to get into devotional service, one to sustain in devotional service, and even after becoming a pure devotee also, he always wants to be in the association of devotees. Moksha dvaram apavartanam. Then, from 12th verse onwards, Krishna praises this human form of life. Right? 12th verse. Sarva svarginopyam etam chanti lokam nirayinastatha sadhakam jnana bhaktibhyam ubhayam tadasadhakam.
The residents of both heaven and hell desire human birth on this earth planet, because human life facilitates the achievement of transcendental knowledge and love of Godhead. Whereas neither heavenly nor hellish bodies efficiently provide such opportunities.
So here Krishna says, human birth is so glorious that even residents of heaven and hell also desires a human birth. Right? So, we have other references also, where in the fifth canto, all the residents of heavenly planets, they desire a human birth. Because they say, pratishta, what is that? Pramushta atisaya indriya utsavaha. Right? Because of excessive over-indulgence in sense gratification, we don't feel the impetus to surrender to Krishna. So heaven, what is the problem? Too much enjoyment. Hell, what is the problem? Too much suffering. In too much suffering and too much enjoyment, you cannot remember Krishna, you cannot do devotional service of Krishna. But in earthly planet, there is a balance. Again, it's reconfirming 8th verse. Right? Excessive suffering or excessive enjoyment are thus impediments to spiritual advancement. Even in, if one goes to, one does pious activities, he goes to heavenly planets, once his pious credits are exhausted, he will come down to earthly heavens. You see, in Jambudvipa there are 9 varshas, the 8 varshas are heavenly varshas. He will come there. Ilavarta varsha, then Bhadrasva and all that. Once he exhausts those remaining few pious credits also, he will come to Bharata Varsha. Okay, Bharata Varsha is a place of, mixed suffering and happiness. And he will be able to go back to Godhead from here. Like that. If he does devotional service. 13th verse. Nanaraswargatim kankshen narakimva vichakshanah nemam lokam jakankshetah Dehaveshat Pramadyati.
A human being who is wise should never desire promotion to heavenly planets or residence in hell. Indeed, a human being should also never desire permanent residence on the earth, for by such absorption in material body, one becomes foolishly negligent of one's actual self-interest.
So, someone who is wise don't want hell or heaven, but a human being does not desire for a permanent residence on earth also. Now in heaven, there is a scope for desire for permanent residence. It's so much enjoyment, you feel like, oh, let the rest of eternity go like this one. In hell, there is so much depression and suffering, you don't see even an iota of hope that he will come out of that kind of situation. Okay? So perpetually continuing in that state of existence, that desire or that thought will exist in heaven or hell. But in material world, there is a mixture of happiness and distress in this earthly planet, right, as a human being. Then there is always a scope of changing the situation, right? Is there any end to this? Okay, one will think in those lines, right? In hell, he will say, I don't think there is any end to this. And there, heavenly planets, I don't want any end to this. But here, he thinks that I want to end this and go to some eternal life. One who has achieved human life on earth has an excellent opportunity to attain spiritual liberation through Krishna consciousness. Okay? The Lord now begins to develop his conclusive proof that actual human progress lies beyond material piety and sin. Ultimately, Krishna wants to make this point. The happiness of human being is not in material piety or sin, it's beyond that. The Lord first clarified that there are basically 3 methods, jnana, karma and bhakti. And now the Lord is explaining that promotion to heavenly planets, which is the final goal of piety, as well as residence in hell, which is the final destination of impiety, they both are useless. Okay. They both are useless in fulfilling the actual purpose of life. Neither material piety nor sin establish the living entity in his constitutional position. Therefore, something else is required, that is bhakti. Etad vidvan pura mrityar abhavaya ghatetasa apramata idam gnatva martyam apyardha siddhidam.
A wise person, knowing that although the material body is subject to death, it can still award the perfection of one's life. should not foolishly neglect to take advantage of this opportunity before death arrives.
Mm. So, this body is made of five elements and it is temporary, it is a source of misery. All this knowledge a devotee has, still he would maintain this body nicely, because this is a body and this human, especially this human life, is the means through which he can execute the process abhideya nicely and attain the goal, right? It is helping him. Unless this body is not taken care of nicely, he will not be able to attain his goal. That's what so our Prahlad Maharaj also says in the beginning verses of his teachings, 7.6, first 5-6 verses. Kaumaram acharet pragno dharman bhagavataniha. Then, durlabham manusham janma tadapi arthatam adhruvam arthatam. Although it is adhruvam, it is arthatam. Right? Although it is not permanent, it is very meaningful. So, it is very important to take care of one's physical health also to be able to execute Krishna service. Prahlad Maharaj in that series of verses only, he says, as long as the body is stout and strong, one will be able to, you know, work towards his ultimate goal. Right? If he is so weak, all consciousness goes onto the body only. Like that. So 15th verse gives an example of 14th verse. Right? What is the example? Very brilliant example. Analogy. Chidyamanam yamair etaihi Kritaneedam vanaspatim khagasvaketam utsrujya kshemam yati hyalam pataha.
Without attachment, a bird gives up the tree in which his nest was constructed when that tree is cut down by cruel men who are like death personified, and thus the bird achieves happiness in another place.
Even 24 gurus, something like that. Right? So a small bird, hawk, is carrying a small piece of meat, and another big bird comes and then it leaves the meat and it will be happy. If it just holds on to that meat, and he will lose his life also. Like that. Similarly, a cruel fellow, woodcutter, comes and cuts a tree and the nest is gone. The bird will go to another tree and make a nest. It's not attached to this nest. Like that. So here, bird in tree is compared to soul in the body. As long as bird is there in the nest, it will take care of the nest nicely. Right? Any repair surgery, it will do the repair work also. It will make a cushion for its children. Right? It will maintain it nicely. But when it is dwindling, when it is going beyond its hands, it will be detached. Similarly, soul is in the body. So we understand we are not this body, but we have to take care of this body. We are in this body. As long as one is in this body, he will take care of the body. When the time comes to leave this body, without any attachment to the body and the bodily relations and the bodily possessions, the soul goes towards Krishna. Like that. 16th verse.
Ahoratrai chidyamanam buddhayur bhayavepyato Muktasangah param buddha niriha upashamyati.
Knowing that one's duration of life is being similarly cut down by passing of days and nights, one should be shaken by fear. In this way, giving up all material attachment and desire, one understands the Supreme Lord and achieves perfect peace.
Here this point is emphasized. One cannot just live happily in this body for the rest of eternity. One should always be aware that at one point this body has to meet its death. It will dwindle. Old age. White hair will come one day. Right? Wrinkles will come on the face one day. One has to be aware of this fact. Now the senses may be strong and then he is doing so many things. But when the senses are become weak, so he has to accept that fact. So an intelligent devotee knows the passing days and nights are exhausting one's duration of life, and he therefore gives up his futile attachment to material sense objects. Futile attachment. Knowing the temporariness of this body, knowing the very meager tenure of the soul within this body, he will not develop attachment towards body and bodily possessions and bodily relations. Right? Because ayur harati vaipumsam udyannastunji annasu tasyartham yat kshanavanita uttama shloka vartaya. So, for any ordinary person, as the sun rises and sets, his tenure in this body is going and he's nearing towards death. But this is not the case in the case of a devotee. It doesn't happen in the case of devotee, because he has no attachment to the body only. The passage of days and nights and the movements of the sun may dwindle the external body, but it's not dwindling the life and spirit of the devotee, the soul, right? Because he is attached to Krishna Katha. If he is attached to Krishna Katha, what happens to him at the end of his life? Na uttama shloka vartanam jushatam tatkathamritam syat sambhramontakalepi smaratam tatpadambudam. If one who has dedicated his life to the glories of Krishna, and he lived the entire life just to glorify Krishna, hearing Krishna Katha, spreading Krishna consciousness everywhere, at the time of death, he will not run into misconceptions of attachment to body, family, relations, possessions, property. No. He is attached to Krishna. Smaratam tat padam bhujam. He will be able to remember Krishna at the time of death. So, no permanent opportunity for residence within this material world. Right? When a devotee dedicates his working energy to achieving eternal residence in the kingdom of God. Actually, why a devotee gives up his body? It is said that devotee finds that this third-class body, which is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, it's not allowing me to serve to my heart's content. Right? I have to change this body so that I can serve better. When that enthusiasm and eagerness for permanent, enthusiastic, energetic service for Krishna grows like anything, then he has to give up this body and then attain another body and continue his service. The body becomes an obstacle for him to do service. Then he will change the body. Nimi Maharaj, yeah, he chose to remain in subtle body only, spiritual body only. He doesn't want to accept the material. Not at all. Now comes the most popular and culminating verse of the series of human life. Nridehaam adhyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karna dharam mayanukulena nabhasvateritam puman bhavabdhim nataretsa atmaha Nridehamadhyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karna dharam mayanukulena nabhasvateritam puman bhavabdhim nataretsa atmaha.
The human body, which can award all benefit in life, is automatically obtained by the laws of nature. Although it is a very rare achievement, this human body can be compared to a perfectly constructed boat having the spiritual master as the captain and the instructions of the personality of Godhead as favorable winds impelling it on its course. Considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize his human life to cross the ocean of material existence must be considered the killer of our own soul.
In your first batch, we asked the students to write a drawing, make a drawing on this verse. So one devotee wrote very well. One big, one big sheep is there, and the devotee is sitting there and then eating Mahaprasad. Dabba is there, and the spiritual master Sannyasi, he is rowing the boat. And Vedas, the sheep is there. So, basically here, this human body is compared to a big, nice boat. And plavam sukalpam guru karana dharam. So, this plavam, this boat, is nicely led by the captain, guru. Guru karana dharam. Right? Karana dharam means the captain of the boat. Then, maya anukulena nabhasvati ritam. Maya. So by me, Krishna is saying, anukulena nabhasvati ritam. So the favorable winds will assist the boat to reach the destination very easily, to maneuver its course. If the wind is like opposite, it cannot go to the destination. So all these Vedic sounds coming from Krishna are like favorable winds for the smooth travel of this boat. Then Puman Bhavadhim Nataretsa Atma. Puman Bhavadhim. If a person does not cross this material existence in spite of having a human body and a bona fide guru and access to shastras, he is Atmaha, killer of his own soul. Right? A bona fide guru, one has access to it. And a human life, one has access to it. And scriptures, Bhagavatam, one has access to it. If, with all these three, if one doesn't, if one gets spaced out and if he doesn't take advantage of all this, then he is a killer of his own soul. What is that verse? Fourth canto, 22nd chapter. This Kumara's discussion with Ruthu Maharaj. It comes after Yatpada Pankaja Palasa Vilasa Bhaktya. Kritsro Mahan Iha Bhavarnava Uplavesham Shadvargan Akrama Suthena Chikirishanti Tattvam Harer Bhagavato Bhajaniya Mandhrim Kritsro Adupam Vesanamuttara Tuskarara. Kritsro Mahan Iha Bhavarnava Uplavesham. This material ocean is so unsurpassable and so dangerous that it is infested with sharks. Shadvargan Akrama Suthena. Right? There are sharks of six senses, six anarthas, constantly attacking this boat. Right? But if one takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, he will be able to cross this ocean, material ocean, very easily. Shadvargan akrama sukhena titirishanti tattvam harer bhagavato bhajaniya manghrim krutodupam vyasanamuttara dastararam. This boat of Krishna's lotus feet will take him from this shore of the ocean to that shore. And this boat has another important quality. It will not only take you across this dangerous ocean, it has the capacity to condense the ocean into small clouds. As soon as you enter the boat, you are ready to get down. No travel on this, because the journey path has become small. The destination and the source, where you are starting, the starting point, ending point have come closer because the ocean has become small. That is the reference for this. Bhavabdhi, Divi verse 10.2. Yeah, Shadvargan Akrama. Samasatta is 10.14. Brahmaji's prayer. Padapallava flow. This you said. Svayam bhujaksha kila sattva-dhamni samadhi-naveshati cetu-saiti tattvada potena mahat-kritena kurvanti govapsa padam bhavabhi. That is the one. Tattvada potena. These are all boat verses. Boat verses. Next. 18th. From 18th till 26th, the different actions required for jnana, different actions required for controlling mind, they are emphasized. 18th verse. We are going very slow today. I thought of completing two chapters. If I can complete this one chapter, that's a big thing, I think. Yadam yadarambheshu nirvinnam viraktah samyatindriya abhyasenatmano yogi dharayedachalam mana.
A transcendentalist, having become disgusted and hopeless in the all endeavors of, for material happiness, completely controls the senses and develops detachment. By spiritual practice, he should then fix the mind on spiritual platform without deviation.
So, one may get disgusted with material life, but he has to focus his mind on the transcendence. Disgusted and hopeless in his endeavors for material happiness, controls his mind and develops detachment. So the inevitable material result for material sense gratification is disappointment and pain that sears the heart. One becomes gradually hopeless and despondent in material life, and then receiving good instructions from the Lord and or his devotee, one transforms one's material disappointment into spiritual success. So material disappointment into spiritual success. Artho Jignasarartha Arthi Jnani to Jnani to Bharatarthaka. When an Artha devotee comes to Krishna, right, he is considered a very glorious devotee. When an Artha devotee comes to a devotee and takes counseling, so that disappointment, material disappointment, will be converted into spiritual success. Right? And if that Artha person, if he doesn't become a devotee of Krishna, if he doesn't come to a devotee or Krishna, he will, as we said, he may get into disappointment, he may become impersonalist, he will become disgusted in his life only. Right? But mere suffering will not lead a person to detachment, not necessarily. And mere detachment will not lead one to bhakti or supreme perfection of life. Daksha had this kind of conception. He says, he accuses Narada, "Narada, you have converted my small children into renunciants. Just by changing dress, they will not become renunciants. Like what we have done. Right? They have to experience material happiness. And while experiencing material happiness, they have to experience material misery. Right? In their attempts to enjoy this world, they will be frustrated and they will become miserable. Then the development, then the detachment will develop in them. Okay, detachment is not something which is induced by an external person, right? By changing this person's mind, right? It has to come on its own. Prabhupada simply defeats that argument, saying that a woman is there, he enjoys with his with her husband, and she will become pregnant, and while giving birth to a baby, she will give all galis to the husband and the whole process of the sensual enjoyment, and she says, "I will never involve in this. I will never indulge in this sense enjoyment anymore." And after child's birth, after a few months again. So material nature, the nature of material nature is to induce an enjoyment propensity in that person, in any person. Okay, mere suffering will not lead one to detachment. Right? So here this suffering is there, but out of that suffering, if one takes shelter of Krishna and shelter of a devotee, then that material suffering or disappointment will convert into spiritual success. Right? Not that every disappointment, every discouragement and every suffering will not lead to spiritual success. This has to be understood in that light. Correct. 19th verse. Dharyamanam mano yerhi Brahmyad asvanavasthitam Atandrito nurodhena Margena atmavisham nayet.
Whenever the mind, being concentrated on the spiritual platform, is suddenly deviated from its spiritual position, one should carefully bring it under the control of the self by following the prescribed means.
When mind goes away, bring it back. How? By prescribed means. Yato anishtarati, manasthinjaram asthiram. Right? So, although one is seriously engaged in, here again, some kind of encouraging verses, some certain theme is coming up from this verse. Although one is seriously engaged, the mind in Krishna consciousness, the mind is so flickering that it may suddenly be deviated from its spiritual position. Right? One may try to engage his mind in Krishna conscious activities, but sometimes there are distractions. Solutions are also given in the future verses. Mind is such a thing in the beginning episodes of Rishabhadev. No, ending episode. Rishabhadev neglected all his spiritual powers, all these mystic powers. Okay, why he neglected spiritual powers, these mystic powers? Sukadeva Goswami gives this explanation. Nature of Nakuryat Karhitit Sakyam Manas hi anavasthitaha. There Chakvartipad, in the first verse, he gives some 4 or 5 analogies about mind. Mind is like a very trusted friend. Right? It trusts you so much, it becomes a so trustworthy friend by your practice of spiritual practice and all, and one day its lower nature will again come up and it will kill the friend only. That's the next verse. Another important analogy is, mind is like a sudra. right? A Sudra may associate with Brahmanas and become qualified to perform sacrifices, right? Or he become a confidential associate of the king. He becomes so trustworthy that king will give him the keys of the treasure house also, and you take care of this. You have become so trustworthy. Then suddenly, the Sudra, old Sudra tendencies will come up, and he will open the treasure house, take everything, go away. Right? Mind is like that. Right? So mind should never be trusted. So like that, there are some 4 or 5 examples like that. Animal and hunter. The hunter is there, he captures certain animals and then puts them in captivity. But one should not trust those animals. At a least opportune moment, they will just run away. If the hunter is inattentive. Right? So these are certain examples. So mind is like that. But what to do? When mind goes away like that, one has to bring it back by prescribed means. Again, that balance is emphasized here. One should carefully bring back the mind. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that if one is too austere or too sensuous, one cannot control the mind. There is an important element of controlling the mind. One should not become so aggressive towards controlling the mind. One should not become so blunt in controlling the mind. One has to treat mind like a child and give, you know, whatever it needs in a regulated way. Right? So, this is a soft control. That comes in the next verse, 21st verse. So, sometimes one may bring the mind under control by allowing the material senses some limited satisfaction. The mind says, I want pizza today at any cost. Right? It's rebelling so much. It's okay. Govinda's pizza, we just give it. Next 2 months, no pizza. Okay? Rasmalai. So give it, no problem. One should not become too austere. If mind says, I want to eat meat, then that's a different thing. One should be aggressive. Right? Mind has some very gross desires and some silly desires also. But one can fulfill the silly desire. One can allow limited satisfaction for the mind so that he will ultimately bring the mind under control. Like that. One should not become too strict with the mind. Too much. That again goes to the impersonalistic stuff, right? Nannies. Sometimes one may occasionally allow the mind to relax a little bit. Ittahara viharasya, little swimming, little joking. Okay, and the joking should not get into prajalpa mode, right? Little few small jokes are okay. Right? There should be some humor also in the life of a sadhu also, right? That's why our lectures are also sometimes filled with some humor, right? If you just speak philosophy, teachings of Lord Kapila. No, just, how will you assimilate? The Buddha Gita is filled with so much, you know, philosophy only. Without these examples and analogies, 24 gurus, etc. You can't assimilate. So, little relaxation is needed. PBT is needed sometimes. And you can't make PBT for every chapter. Like that. So, and that should, one should not excessively do that thing. One should allow the mind limited satisfaction, not complete. Okay? One should fulfill the simple, harmless desires of mind, not the gross, degrading desires of the mind. Okay? One should have that discrimination. Okay, mind today says that I have to take one daru or whatever. Let me allow limited satisfaction. That is not correct. Like that. When the mind desires sinful sense gratification, such an illicit sex or intoxication, one must simply tolerate the mind's foolishness and by strenuous effort push on with Krishna consciousness. Then the waves of illusion will succeed. Ultimately, these are all some simple techniques only. But the ultimate solution to control mind is to engage it in positive service of Guru and Krishna. Only by the service of Guru and Krishna can mind be controlled. Right? Take some responsibility in the mission of Guru and Krishna, then mind will automatically come under control. Take some anxiety for Krishna. Right? The mind is constantly thinking about how to get this done only. Right? Where is the time for sense gratification? Schedule mein nahi hai. It's not in schedule what it will do. Like that. 20th verse. Manogatim na visrjet jita prano jitendriya Sattva sampannaya buddhyam mana atma vasham nayet.
should never lose sight of the actual goal of mental activities, but rather conquering the life, air and senses and utilizing intelligence strengthened by the mode of goodness, one should bring the mind under the control of the self.
Okay. So mind is like reins of the horse in that body chariot. Intelligence is the driver, right? Mind is controlled by intelligence. One has to sharpen his intelligence. Then mind will come under control, like that. The intelligence is so weak and mind is so strong, what will it do? It cannot control the mind. So one has to sharpen the intelligence more by shastric study, understanding. So although the mind may suddenly wander outside the jurisdiction of self-realization, one must bring it back. So the best solution is to keep it busy in service of Krishna. Material mind is naturally inclined to accept material objects at every moment. Therefore, unless the mind is seriously brought under the control, there is no possibility of becoming steady on the path of spiritual advancement. So the key is to get busy in service. I often quote this analogy. Our desire for sense gratification are like ripples on the river. Right? When the river meets the ocean and the big waves or tides of the ocean overwhelm these ripples of the river, ripples become insignificant. They disappear. Tides will become prominent. Similarly, when a devotee aligns himself with the desires of a pure devotee, a guru or Krishna, and works according to the instructions of the guru in service of Krishna, then sense gratified desires will not disturb us. There is no time for them. Right? 21st verse.
Yesha vai paramo yogo manasa sangraha smrita hridayagnatvam anvichan damyasyeva arvato muni muhu.
An expert horseman desiring to tame a headstrong horse first lets the horse have his way for a moment, and then pulling the reins gradually places the horse on the desired path. Similarly, the supreme yoga process is that by which one carefully observes the movement and desires of the mind and gradually brings them under full control.
Again, this soft control of mind is given with an example. Horse is there. Horse is not very submissive, right? It wants to go here and there and wants to do something. So the horse rider will allow the horse to fulfill its desire little bit, slightly, and then he pulls it back and goes. If he completely controls the horse right from the beginning only, that beating, and the horse will come upon this fellow and then it will ride on him, right? So one has to tame the mind also like that, the way one tames the horse, right? Because mind is like horse. So a yogi allows the mind to reveal its materialistic propensities and then controls them with superior intelligence. Catch a tell me, just reveal certain things. Not now, later. Okay? Maybe little, this much only, not that much. So like that, slowly he has to bring it into, one has to see mind as a separate identity, separate entity, right? And deal with him. Like that. Discussing is easier than doing it, right? But one has to do it. The rider never forgets his actual goal or destination. Ultimately, what is the goal of horse rider? He has to go somewhere, right? Somehow, managing with this stupid horse, rebellious horse, he has to reach the destination. Similarly, we have to deal with our stupid minds and then somehow reach the destination of Krishna consciousness. So excessive austerity or restriction may result in great mental disturbance. Just as pulling excessively on the reins of the horse may cause the horse to rear up against the rider, we discussed. What is the root cause? Extremes. Excessive austerity and excessive enjoyment. So these two are not good. One has to have balance. This whole chapter is about balance. The path of self-realization depends upon clear intelligence. And easiest way to acquire such expertise is to surrender to Krishna. Esham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogantam. So what are the problems now? If one is into extreme austerity or extreme enjoyment, he cannot control the mind. So one has to control the mind. How one has to control the mind? By clear intelligence. Right? And how will that clear intelligence come? By performing devotional service, by surrendering to Krishna, Krishna himself will give. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. With that you control the mind in a balanced way. One may not be a great scholar or spiritual intellect, but if one is sincerely engaged in loving service to the Lord without personal envy or personal motivation, the Lord will reveal from within the heart the methodology required to control the mind. Again, it's coming to what Maharaj was sharing with us yesterday. One may not be a scholar or spiritual intellect. In 2013 Kartik Yatra also Maharaj mentioned on this theme. One may memorize all the verses in the Vedic literature, he can quote left, right, center, and he is like genius in all the scriptures, but he may not even understand a single syllable of the entire Vedic literature if he is proud, if he doesn't have submissiveness and surrender towards Krishna and Guru. So this quality is more important. So spiritual, with great scholarship and spiritual intellect, if that is not needed, if one is sincerely engaged in loving service of Krishna without envy and without personal motivation. So when a devotee is completely surrendered, although he is not a scholar, his intelligence is very sharp. He need not make any other attempts to control his mind. His mind is automatically controlled because his intelligence is sharp. Not by Shastra, by surrender and submissiveness to Guru and Krishna. Yesterday Maharaj was quoting that example of the South Indian Brahmin, Gaurdikushwala Dhaudi Maharaj. So expertly riding the waves of mental desire, a Krishna conscious person does not fall from the saddle. And he eventually rides the way back home, back to the Lord. yes, Nati Sakuna Nirvana, 9th verse. You take me. So that is about soft control by allowing little bit. There is hard control also. There is 22nd verse. Sankhyena sarva bhavanam pratiloma anulomata bhavapyava anudhyayen manoyavat prasidati.
Till one's mind is fixed in spiritual satisfaction, one should analytically study the temporary nature of all material objects, whether cosmic, earthly or atomic. One should constantly observe the process of creation through the natural progressive function and the process of annihilation through the regressive function.
There is another way of controlling mind is analytical study of the temporary nature of material objects. Right? So there is a saying that whatever goes up must come down. You throw this pen up, it will come down. So the material mind may be attached to sex. Therefore, by spiritual intelligence, one should scrutinize the temporary nature of one's own body and the body that has artificially become the object of one's material lust. So one may apply this rigid analysis of this material body in this cosmic body of the Lord, right? And to understand the actual situation and he should control the mind. So Krishna, one who has not achieved the platform of spontaneous Krishna consciousness must remain constantly vigilant so as not to be grossly cheated by the material energy of the Lord. Constantly vigilant. So inattentiveness will cause fall down of a person, however height he may have reached. Vadanti Vishwam Kavayasmanasvaram Pashyanti Chadhyatma Vido Upasthitaha Tathapi Muhyanti Tavajamaya. Right? Somebody may be so advanced and he can preach to other people, he can convince people about the temporariness of this material world, still Tathapi Muhyanti Tavajamaya. Still he will get bewildered by Lord's material energy. This is in residence, prayers of the residents of Jambudvipa, 518.4. Prayer to Haisirsha. Now, it's mentioned that one has to analyze the temporary nature of this world in 22nd verse. What is the result of such an analysis? That's discussed in 23rd verse. Nirvinnasya viraktasya purushasya oktavedina manastyajati dauratmyam chintitasya anuchintaya.
When a person is disgusted with the temporary illusory nature of this world and is thus detached from it, his mind, guided by the instructions of his spiritual master, considers again and again the nature of this world and eventually gives up the false identification with matter.
Disgust, detachment, guidance of Guru, then contemplation on the nature of this world, finally he will give up his false identity with matter. Right? This is the result of the analysis. Purport is very nice, you can read all lines. Although it is difficult to control the mind, with constant practice the mind can be spiritualized in Krishna consciousness. The sincere disciple constantly remembers the instructions of Guru and thereby faces again and again the stark truth that the material world is not ultimate reality. By detachment and perseverance, the mind gradually gives up its propensity towards sense gratification. See this beautiful phrase. Thus, illusion loses its grip on a sincere Krishna conscious devotee. So far, illusion has gripped this conditioned soul, illusion loses that. He is going out of the grip of illusion. The alien has to concentrate on some other fellow. So this is all happening by dedication to spiritual master, right? And with determination and perseverance and detachment, executing the will of spiritual master. 24th verse. Yamadibhir yoga pathair anvikshikya cha vidyaya Mamarchopasana bhirva nanyair yogyam smaren manaha.
The various disciplinary regulations and the purificatory procedures of the yoga system through logic and spiritual education and through worship and adoration of me, one should constantly engage his mind in remembering the personality of Godhead. The goal of yoga. No other means should be employed for this purpose.
Constantly engaged in remembering Krishna. He is the goal of all yoga. So, yogyam, or the most appropriate object of meditation, that is Krishna. He is yogyam. So, one who directly takes to the worship of the Lord should not employ other methods. For full dependence on the Lord is in itself the supreme process of perfection. Next. So these are, some of these are meant for jnanis, and they are equally, the principle is applicable to bhaktas also. 25th. Yadi kuryat pramadena yogi karma vigarhitam yogena eva dahet amho nanyatatra kadachana.
If, because of momentary inattention, a yogi accidentally commits an abominable activity, then, by the very practice of yoga, he should burn to ashes the sinful reactions, without at any time employing any other procedure.
So, when there is some mistake, when there is an accidental fall down, okay, not a premeditated exploitation of Lord's mercy, ultimately, all are mercy cases only. And Lord is always merciful. But if a practicing devotee unduly takes advantage of Lord's mercy and commits sinful activities on the strength of that mercy, it's an offense. Right? One has to take the, one will not be excused for it, one has to take the reaction for it. However, if one accidentally commits some mistakes, the Lord forgives him. One has to honestly regret for that mistake but one should not become so depressed and discouraged that he will leave the process of the devotional service only. I am not qualified, I am so useless. It's like inferiority complex, it's not humility. One should have humility to accept one's mistake and regret and honestly repent for it. But one should not have so much of inferiority complex or what is that called, so much of depression and discouragement that he leaves the process only. So anything too much is not recommended, even if it is depression. Like that. So one should pick oneself from that accidental fall down and should go vigorously on this path of perfection, right? Devotional service. Apichaya Sudharacharo, it is mentioned. So one should, however, be most cautious to avoid such an unhappy event. But if by the force of previous habits or some other conditionings, if one commits certain mistakes, so one should repent for it, but not become too depressed that he will get distracted from the process. That is very much emphasized here. And 26th verse.
स्वेस्वेधिकारे या निष्ठा सगुणा परिकीर्तिता कर्मणां जात्य शुद्धानां अनेन नियमः कृतः गुणदोष विधानेन संगानां त्याजनेच्छया.
It is firmly declared that the steady adherence of transcendentalists to their respective spiritual positions constitutes real piety, and that sin occurs when transcendentalist neglects his prescribed duty. One who adopts this standard of piety and sin, sincerely desiring to give up all past association with sense gratification, is able to subdue materialistic activities which are by nature impure.
So, a definition of piety and sin is given. So firmly attached to steady adherence of firmly declared that the steady adherence of transcendentalists to respect to spiritual position constitutes real piety. So adherence to one's regulated methods, prescribed methods, that is piety, and neglecting the prescribed methods is impiety on any path. This is applicable to any path. It is a universal definition. Okay. Something is recommended and you violate it, that is impiety. You follow it, that becomes piety. Like that. So Krishna explains more clearly that those persons directly engaged in self-realization, either through Jnana Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, need not give up their regular duties and perform social penances to atone for an accidental fall down. So materialistic rewards are meant only to engage materialistic people who otherwise would become demoniac. To purify an accidental fall down, one who is engaged in transcendental realization need not adopt any procedure beyond his own spiritual practice. If there is a mistake, what other shelter we'll take? We study Bhagavatam, and Bhagavatam is recommending so many, is giving us so many promises that I will purify you, I will purify your intentions. But now our intentions are not pure. But to purify your intentions, you have to repeatedly take shelter of Bhagavatam only. Where else do we go? Because there is no other shelter. So here Krishna is recommending that you take shelter of your own path only. For purification, you need not go somewhere else. Right? Now I practice Krishna Bhakti and then there's some mistake. I will go do some karmakanda, get annulled, purify myself, come back. Do Krishna Bhakti, not like that. Do that, take shelter of the Bhakti process only to purify oneself. Like that. Because we are all work in progress, right? Construction site means work in progress. When there is work in progress, some reti will fall down, bricks will fall down, and then we have to do some repair work. We have to cut something, then we have to break something. All this will happen. So ultimately, for the building to completely come into proper shape, where a person can go and reside and live, and it has to become functional and flesh should be on, for all this to happen, right, there is a lot of endeavor that goes on. The work in progress is going on. So when as we were discussing the other day, when somebody is walking, learning to walk, he will fall many times, but he has to get up, take shelter of that ground only, and then get up and then walk again for him to run. right? And if you practice this walking, you will be able to run like that. One should not be unnecessarily discouraged too much beyond what is necessary to progress in spiritual path. One who engages his senses, mind and intelligence 24 hours a day in Lord's service is the most pious person. And the Lord personally protects such a surrender. So we will take a very short break and we will complete this chapter, and if possible we will start the next chapter. It's almost one. 27th verse. 27 and 28. And about the demigod worship, in Krishna's pastimes, Krishna goes to celebrate the Shivaratri, Pandikava. Worship of Captain. So ultimately, all worship is for Krishna only, but as the social norm, sometimes they participate in it. The Katyayani worship, I purport say that it's ultimately Yogamaya they are worshipping, not Mahamaya. Rupees. Rukmini went to Durga. He says Rukmini went to Durga temple before her marriage. Mm. 27th verse.
Jata Shraddho Mat Kathasu Nirvana Sarva Karmasu Veda Dukhatmakan Kaman Parityage Pyanishwaraha Tato Abhajetamam Pritaha Shraddhalur Dridhanischaya Jushamanaschatan Kaman Dukhodarkamscha Garhayan.
Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and the sincere repents such activities. Sincerely repent such activities.
So here Krishna is giving the beginning stages of bhakti. So a perfected devotee, a pure devotee, he need not bother about sometimes sense enjoyment, sometimes distraction of mind, all this. He is beyond all that stages. But for the beginner in bhakti, beginner in the process of this devotional service, these are needed. As I said, like work in progress, somebody was trying to walk, somebody is learning cycling. When I was first learning cycle, I can't sit on a seat, I was not as tall as the cycle. Small children, you see, so they put their leg, you know, from this, between that, you know, V-shape, right? And they do like this, they catch the seat and then drive like this. So slowly, eventually, when they grow, little more practice, they climb on the cycle. Right? So this is about... In Telugu we call Pakkatokkudu. We do it from this side. We don't sit on the seat. So these are beginning stages of devotional service. So work in progress. So our backup room we are making for seven temples of Vrindavan. Since 6 months we are making only. So they have made one thing. Then in the plan they showed me and they said we remove this, we'll modify like this. Then they constructed also. Then I felt this partition is not needed. I told them break it. So they broke that. So now many things are happening. The wiring is there. So they did wiring. Then Madhumadhapur, we wanted concealed wiring. So they again broke it and kept the wires inside. So many things are happening. So in the beginning stages, when the room is not completely ready, there will be a lot of breaking and then repairing, and a patch of work. Again, repainting, reworking, replastering, all this will happen. So similarly, in the beginning stages of devotional service, there will be some slips and mistakes and some imperfections. All this will be there. So one should not be discouraged by it. So Krishna is encouraging so much. So even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to miserable result. He is aware of the result. still because of some certain habits he is doing it. So this, again, quoting these verses, we can feel hope and feel encouragement, but we should not feel that Krishna is licensing us to do some sanjayana. Of course, I am a beginner, let me do some sanjayana. That is not the goal of this chapter. Right? He is not accepting that he is a beginner out of humility, he is accepting that he is a beginner out of a desire for sense enjoyment. Right? Quoting Krishna. That is not the purpose of these verses. Now that will become sense. So a sincere devotee has practically seen that all material activities lead only to sense gratification. And all sense gratification leads only to misery. Right? So the devotee sincerely desires to be established in his constitutional position as Lord's servitor, and he prays to the Lord to elevate him to exalted position. So prayer will help when there are some deviations. So one should not become overly depressed or morose, but to remain enthusiastic to go on with loving service. So under no circumstances one should willingly commit sinful activities. You cannot willingly commit. Unwillingly, if someone commits because of the force of circumstances and bad habits, then they may be forgiven, they may be rectified, they should be repented for, and they can continue. So committing some, you know, mistakes and some silly things is not a disqualification for a devotional service. One should understand it. Because one may get into depression so much, and he will say, I am not qualified, and then he will leave the path only. That is not... that is not recommended. That is not a disqualification. One should overcome it. One should become humbled by it. A pure devotee certainly feels spiritual affection for all living entities, including so-called wife and children. But he knows that material bodily attraction leads to no good, for it simply entangles. But whether the Lord removes such attachments immediately or let me go on being afflicted by them, I will never give up my devotional service. See this. With a prayer, he requests the Lord, please help me overcome this condition. Right? But what he thinks is, whether the Lord removes such attachment from me or not, I will continue with my devotional service. See this mood, beautiful lines. Even if the Lord places millions of obstacles in my path, and even if because of my offenses I go to hell, I will never for a moment stop serving Lord Krishna. So one has to be so fixed in his services, in spite of so many mental issues here and there and so many obstacles. It's Krishna's way. Once Prabhupada was asked by some devotee, Prabhupada, will this lust ever go? Prabhupada said, Govinda. Govinda desires. But you continue devotional service. The word Prita indicates that a devotee feels exactly like the son or a subject of the Supreme Lord. And it's very attached to his relationship. So, relationship between Krishna and a practicing devotee is like father and son. Even if the son sometimes does some mischief and commits some abominable activity, still father is lovingly taking him and caressing him and then encouraging him and continue. It's like that. Although one should sincerely repent, he should not become chronically depressed. Sincere repentance is different from chronic repentance. In the first canto, 18th chapter also, Prabhupada says that one should repent, and one's sinful activities will be burned in the fire of repentance. Right? So, committing mistakes is inevitable in this material world, right? And we have been traversing in this material world since millions and millions of births, since time immemorial. That's all. Just 10 years of bhakti will take away all those conditionings or what? Right? 10 years of our imperfect practice, 10 years or 20 years or whatever, all this will disappear or what? So much advancement is there. That itself is a great thing, great mercy. Right? We have come to this level, right? That we have agreed to chant 16 rounds. That itself is a big thing. Right? So we should continue. One should not become so depressed. Right? If one becomes more concerned with renunciation than with acting for the pleasure of Krishna, he is misunderstanding the position of loving devotional service. So it's not about personal purity, my detachment, my aspirations. It's not that. Do you think they are more powerful than Krishna's mercy? That is the question raised here. Krishna's mercy is more powerful than all our conditions. We should depend on Krishna's mercy more than our... We should think of Krishna's mercy more than our disqualifications or conditionings. The simple formula is divert the mind towards thinking about one's own inabilities to the positive service of Krishna, positive service of Guru and Krishna. So that is the key formula given right in the 22nd purport only. 22, right? Be busy in service. Where does it come? 20th purport. One should make oneself busy in service. Right? If there is a free space for the mind, it will go here and there. If mind is occupied with, you know, so many responsibilities and anxieties for service of Krishna, then there is no time for mind. Okay, sense gratification is inversely proportional to devotional service. So the sense gratification and devotional service are opposed to each other. When I'm making notes, I wrote that equation. 29th verse. Proktena bhakti yogena bhajato maskaran muneh kama hridaya nashyanti sarve mai hride sthite.
When an intelligent person engages constantly in worshipping me through loving devotional service as described by me, his heart become firmly situated in me. Thus all material desires within the heart are destroyed.
Okay. In this purport, an intelligent person worships me and does devotional service to me, all material desires within the heart are destroyed. So devotional service will destroy all the material desires, right? So hearing and chanting will purify one from material desires. Many references, so many verses are there in this thing. Devotional service will destroy material desires. Pibantiye bhagavata atmanasatam kathamritam shravanapateshu samgritam punantite vishaya vidushitase kechitya valaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dhunmanti karsnena niharam yobhaskara. Any other? Nashta prayesha bhadresha nityam bhagavata sevaya nityam bhagavata sevaya. This entire purport you can underline and memorize. I'll read the one key sentence. By serving the Lord, one becomes strengthened in the conviction that Sri Krishna is the only actual enjoyer. And all others are meant to share the Lord's pleasure through devotional service. He is Bhaktaram Yignatapasam. He is Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasava Bhurtya. And all others also, he will only enjoy, will not enjoy. No, we can also enjoy by sharing the pleasure with Krishna through serving Him. Our enjoyment is in service to Krishna. And His enjoyment is in receiving service from us. Like that. Of course, if the servant is so exalted, he wants to serve the servant also. That is Krishna's pleasure. Ultimately, pleasure is in service. A devotee of the Lord situates Sri Krishna on a beautiful throne within his heart, and there offers the Lord constant service. Just as the sun, rising sun gradually eliminates all trace of darkness, the Lord's presence within the heart causes all material desires there to weaken and eventually disappear. Now, in the practicing stage, material desires are prominent in the initial stages. When the practice becomes intense, those material desires become weakened, slackened. Then, in advanced stage, they will completely disappear. So the result of practicing such devotional service is given in 30th verse. So 29th verse says, Lord takes away all material desires. 30th verse says, the result. Bhidyate hridaya granthis chidyante sarva samshayah kshiyante chasya karmani maidrishte khilatmani.
The knot in the heart is pierced, All misgivings are cut to pieces, and the chain of fruitive actions is terminated when I am seen as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So, Vidyate, we know this verse from first canto also. So, Hridaya Granthi is the hard knot of the heart, which is bound to illusion by false identification with material body. So, I'll read one sentence in the purport. Materialistic persons consider sense enjoyment and speculative doubting to be essential for civilized life. Right? They think they are essential. Speculation and sense enjoyment. A pure devotee realizes Krishna, realizes that Krishna is an unlimited ocean of happiness and the personification of knowledge. This realization of Lord Krishna completely eradicates the twin tendencies of sense gratification and mental speculation. Twin tendencies. Jnana karmadi anavritam. So bhakti dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort. Just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. This is about a person who has proper digestion. Not in the indigestion we do. Right? So when the digestive fire is good, then whatever we eat is digested. Similarly, when bhakti is done properly, it dissolves the subtle body. So, there is no special endeavor for mukti also. 31st verse. Tasman mad bhakti yuktasya yogino vai madatmana nagnanam naca vai ragyam prayashreyo bhavet iha.
Therefore, for a devotee engaged in my loving service, with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection within this world.
So, jnanam, vairagyam, these are not the ultimate things. Definitely, they are not the means to attain bhakti. Once one does bhakti, jnana and vairagya will follow. Right? They are like subservience of bhakti, they are assistance of bhakti. They are not bosses or prerequisites of bhakti. Right? The surrendered devotee of Lord Krishna does not seek perfection through the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation outside loving service of the Lord. Devotional service to Lord Krishna, being itself the supreme transcendental process, never depends on secondary methods like jnana and vairagya. Devotional service gives jnana and vairagya. Again, that same example that we discussed, Narada Muni gave bhakti to Daksha's sons, then jnana and vairagya followed. And Daksha says, they should get vairagya first. They should cultivate jnana. They should experience some material misery. Then they will be qualified for this. Bhakti given by a devotee is accompanied by jnana and vairagya. If the devotee tries to purify himself through cultivation of knowledge and renunciation, which fall outside the scope of devotional service, there is a danger of his being deviated from Lord's lotus feet and falling down completely from the transcendental path. So, renunciation and knowledge have their role to play in bhakti, but they are not all enough. One who endeavors for purification outside the loving service of the Lord has not actually understood the transcendental potency of bhakti. It's like you become the personal secretary of the most wealthiest person, say Ambani or someone, and you say, I'll come to your office every day, breakfast meal every day. If you can't ask like that, he will say, give, take this credit card, go to whatever restaurant you want and eat. You have become my secretary. Don't worry about your breakfast and lunch, right, and timings. Where can I sit? Shall I sit on the floor? He has his office. Take it. It's like that. One should not underestimate the transcendental potency of bhakti yoga. It can automatically endow one with jnana and vairagya. Right? And one should appreciate the extent of Krishna's mercy. That one should not minimize the extent of Krishna's mercy. It's all about underestimation. To have actual understanding of Krishna's mercy and potency of bhakti yoga, one needs knowledge. So when Rupa Goswami defines jnana karma the anavritam, he is not eliminating jnana completely. Right? That knowledge which enhances our appreciation for Krishna, Krishna's paraphernalia, nama, rupa, guna, leela, that is very much needed for bhakti. That helps bhakti. But what jnana is condemning? He is condemning that jnana which leads to impersonal perfection, impersonal liberation. And he says, anya abhilashita sunyam, he said. You should not have any other aspirations other than devotional service. But he did not say jnana karmadi sunyam, he did not say. He said jnana karmadi anavrutam, he said. What does it mean? Your practice of bhakti should not be covered by jnana and karma. He never said that they should be devoid of jnana and karma. Jnana and karma should not become so prominent that bhakti takes a secondary position. Right? It should not become prominent. Jnana karma is anavritam, they should not cover. Avritam means covering. Right? Jnana karma should not cover bhakti. Bhakti should be prominent. Jnana and karma are accompanying assistants. Like that. Just now, few purports back we read, devotees who are not very intellectual, they are not scholarly, they didn't read so many scriptures, but because of their dedication and surrender and service to Krishna, they have all intelligence. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. They are pure devotees.
Askam Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayogita Ajanayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Yadhoga. Immediately Jnana and Vairagya comes. Going on gets bhakti. So there Prabhupada translate Jnana is like causeless knowledge. So what does it mean, causeless knowledge?
We need to actually see, that's a very pinpointed question. We need to actually see the context of the purport. Maybe after Prabhuji comes also we can ask the question. Causeless knowledge. So overall understanding is that I got from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and all, that knowledge which helps you appreciate Krishna and Krishna Bhakti, that is always favorable for Bhakti. That knowledge which leads to impersonal liberation is not favorable for Bhakti. And the pursuits for knowledge should not overpower their practice of bhakti. They should be there as assistants of bhakti. Then, within this world, one's heart is bound by sex attraction, which disturbs one's meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna. Okay, this is the last paragraph. Material desire stubbornly resides within the heart, can be vanquished by taking full shelter. Without false confidence in one's own cultivation of knowledge and renunciation, one should depend fully on the mercy of Lord Krishna and at the same time strictly follow rules and regulations. So one should do that parishrama. Drishtva parishrama Krishna kripaya asit padam dhanam. Do that parishrama of the following the regulated principles of devotional service, at the same time depend on Krishna's mercy. So that is mentioned here. Next, 32 and 33 further describe how bhakti is independent of all other processes. Yat karma bhir yat tapasa jnana vairagya taschayat yogena dana dharmena shreyo bhir itarair api sarvam mad bhakti yogena madbhakto labhatenjasa svargapavargam madhama kathanchid yadivanchati.
Everything that can be achieved by future activities, penance, knowledge, detachment, mystic yoga, charity, religious duties and all other means of perfecting life is easily achieved by my devotee to loving service unto me. If somehow or other my devotee desires promotion to heaven, liberation or residence in my abode, he easily achieves such benedictions.
Okay. So bhakti, everything that can be achieved by this karma, jnana, yoga, what is this called? Dana, dharma, shreya, all this is achieved by bhakti also. Vedeshu, yajneshu, tapasu, jayva, daneshu, yatpunya, phalaprapishti. Atyati tatsarvam idam vishit. Yogi param. So, bhakti gives what other processes also give, plus additional benefit.
Okay.
We have 1000 rupee note, we already have 100 rupee note, we already have 10 rupee note, we already have whatever, 50 rupee note.
Exactly. Desires of devotees. All the pure devotees are desireless.
Desiring only the Lord's service, sometimes a great devotee may desire the Lord's benediction to facilitate his loving service. So devotees are desireless, means material desireless, but they can have desires to serve the Lord in specific ways. To see the Lord in specific forms. Vidya dhyada urugaya bhavayanti tattvatya pushpranayase sadanugrahaya. That's one thing. And Uddhava came and said, I want to come to you, come with you to the spiritual world and serve you there. In the sixth chapter he said, right, that is the desire from Uddhava's side. Then Chitraketu said, I want to become king of Vidyadhara planet and I want to serve you like that. So he became like that. Then Sukadeva Goswami, great narrator of Bhagavatam, he said he desired to avoid entanglement. I will be in this womb only, I will meditate on Krishna and he said like that. Right? So because of intense loving desire to serve the lotus feet of the Lord, a devotee may also desire promotion to the spiritual world. His focus is on service only. To do that service, he may ask some facility. For example, we are giving certain service. That service needs a laptop. That service needs iMac. Right? You propose for iMac. I want to make videos. So somehow it will be sanctioned and then later you will get and you make videos in a faster pace. Right? So, the facility is requested to do the service, not for sense gratification. So, that desire is mentioned here. If Lord Krishna detects within the devotee's heart a desire for such benedictions, Lord can easily award them to such to his devotee. Okay. But all auspicious results of this process are easily achieved by loving service of Krishna. So the conclusion is, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udharati tivrena bhakti yogena yedita purushata. Whatever desire you may have, you have no desires, you have desires, you have desire for this, you have desire for that, no problem. Krishna is available. You can come to Krishna. That is the advertisement that Bhagavatam is giving. With so many examples.
Nakinchit sadhavo dhira bhakta hekanti no mama vanchancha pimaya dattam kaivalyam apunarbhavam. Because my devotees possess saintly behavior and deep intelligence, they completely dedicate themselves to me and do not desire anything besides me. Indeed, even if I offer them liberation from birth and death, they do not accept it.
This is like Salokya Sarishti Samitya. Even if I offer them liberation, they will not accept it. Prahlad Maharaj, you are quoting, right? So they just need service for Krishna. Nothing else. Pure devotee automatically gains an eternal life of bliss and knowledge in the Lord's personal abode and thus considers mere liberation without loving service to be most abominable. I don't want material heavens. Right? What I want? Sa uttama shloka mahan mukhachito vidhatsva karnayita mesham. When pure devotees are speaking, I want millions of years to be around. This is my duty. And what does Pracheta say? We don't want liberation from this material world. We don't want to stop this process of transmigration from one body to another body. Lord, you are Ananta. Because we are Ananta, we have to ask you a benediction which is Ananta. You are unlimited, we want an unlimited benediction. What is unlimited? Your qualities, your names, your glories, your activities, your pastimes. We just want to hear all of them. Hear about all of them. In the association of devotees. This is our benediction. No other desire. So these are the aspirations of pure devotees. They don't desire anything else besides me. Right? Vanchanti api maya duttam. Ekantino yasena kanchanartham vanchanti evai bhagavat prapanda. Atyadbhutam tacharitam sumangalam gayanta ananda samudramam. When I read this vanchanti, I remember that vanchanti. Gajendra's vanchanti. वञ्चन्त्येवै भगवत्प्रपन्न नैरपेक्षं परं प्राहु निःश्रेयसम् अनल्पकं तस्मान् निराशिषो भक्तिर् निरपेक्षस्य मे भवेत्.
It is said that complete detachment is the highest stage of freedom. Therefore, one who has no personal desire and does not pursue personal rewards can achieve loving devotional service unto me.
So detachment is the most freedom state. Right? Nirapeksham is nishreyasam. Nairapeksham, no desire except devotional service, is the param prahur naishreyasam, highest stage of liberation. So therefore, one who has no personal desire and does not pursue personal rewards can achieve devotional service. As unmixed sunray is very forceful and is therefore called tivra, similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing and chanting may be performed by one and all regardless of their motive. So the simple faith that one will achieve everything by approaching Lord Krishna is the essence of all knowledge and carries even a fallen person over the painful hurdles of difficult stages. The simple faith, what is the simple faith? That one will achieve everything by approaching Krishna. So Krishna is like one and only Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Saranam Vraja. Only Krishna, nothing else, no one else. That simple faith will make one cross over the hurdles of this Kali Yuga also.
Namayekanta bhaktanam gunadosha gunadoshodbhava gunah sadhunam samachittanam buddheh param upeyusham.
Material piety and sin which arise from the good and evil of this world cannot exist within my unalloyed devotees, who being free from material hankering maintain steady spiritual consciousness in all circumstances. Indeed, such devotees have achieved me, the Supreme Lord, who am beyond anything that can be conceived by material intelligence.
So now Krishna is again concluding. What is the original question of Uddhava? How can we transcend this material piety and impiety? Krishna says, material piety and sin cannot exist in my unalloyed devotees. Till you develop taste for hearing and chanting, you have to consider this material, what is material piety and impiety, etc. Ekanta bhaktanam are beyond the realm of material piety and impiety. So, Krishna clearly explains that a pure devotee is recognized by complete detachment from personal desire. Therefore, a pure devotee constantly engaged in selfless service of Lord Krishna may not always observe the innumerable details of Vedic rules and regulations. So, he need not observe these rules and regulations of Vedas because he is doing selfless service of Krishna. Such occasional negligence is not to be considered a transgression of Vedic laws. See, that's occasional negligence. Even pure devotee also wants to follow all these Vedic protocols, but sometimes he's so much in selfless service, he understands what is higher principle, sometimes he may compromise on some lower protocols. That also is occasional only. So, still he is a pure devotee, and his act of neglecting Vedic rituals is not considered a transgression. Similarly, observance of ordinary material piety does not constitute the ultimate qualification of soul surrender to God. These two are important points in purport. Just following the protocols of material piety, what is good and what is bad, will not make you a pure devotee. And a pure devotee need not follow all these Vedic rules and regulations. These are the points. Apichaya Sudaracharo again. A momentary fall down by a sincere devotee of the Lord cannot change the Lord's feelings towards such a person. A parent is there, a child does some mistake, so father may correct him or do something, but father cannot give up that affection for the child, right, because he has done some mistake. Like that. last verse. Evam etan maya dishtan
anutishtanti me patha
kshemam vindanti matsthanam yad brahma paramam viduhu.
Those who seriously follow the methods of achieving me that I have personally taught attain freedom from illusion, and upon reaching my personal abode at last, perfectly understand the absolute truth.
Okay. So, one who seriously follows these methods of achieving Krishna will attain freedom from Maya and achieve Krishna's abode also. So that's how Krishna answered Uddhava's question of transcending this material piety and impiety, good and evil, by establishing the glory of pure devotional service, which is beyond jnana and vairagya. Thank you all very much. International Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. I would request Dakshinder Prabhu to make a presentation. Please. Yes. Have your permission to speak in Hindi? Radha Govind Maharaj बार बिहार में प्रचार करते हैं। प्रचार करते हैं तो उन्होंने भागवत का क्लास दिया और कहा कि मुझे कोई आप लोगों में से कोई ऐसा व्यक्ति चाहिए जो भागवत के लिए अपना जीवन देगा। एक लड़का खड़ा हुआ आगे आया, कहा तुम मैं देना चाहिए। वही आगे जाके गौर कृष्णदास को समझ मेरा सौभाग्य था कि मैं 2007 से लेकर 2012 तक हम दोनों गौर कृष्ण महाराज हम दोनों राधा गोविंद महाराज की किताबों के माध्यम से मिल चुके थे। हमने करीबन 9 किताबें प्रिंट किया राधा गोविंद महाराज की भागवत की, और उसके अंतराल में हम दोनों काफ़ी करीब हैं। रात को 2-2, 3-3 बजे तक हम लोग श्रीमद भागवत के अलग अलग आचरण के टीकाओं से हम लोग वो जो महाराज जो कहते थे उसका एडिटिंग करते थे, प्रूफ रीडिंग करते थे, वह समय बिताते थे। उस कारण से उन महानुभाव महाभागवत के गौर कृष्ण महाराज की वजह से मेरा भागवत से संपर्क हुआ। वैसे मेरा मैनेजमेंट, मैं आईटी का स्टूडेंट हूँ, मास्टर्स इन आईटी की वजह से कोई स्कोप नहीं था भागवत में कैसी रुचि हो सकती है। लेकिन गौर कृष्ण महाराज की संगति के वजह से उन्होंने कृपा करके मुझे भागवत पढ़ने पर लगाया। मैं जब हर भक्तों के बीच में जब हम भागवत की चर्चा करते थे तो हमेशा एक प्रश्न चिन्ह होता था भक्तों के चेहरे पर कि भागवत कैसे पढ़े। भागवत इतना बड़ा है, इतनी सारी किताबें हैं, और जो चलिए हम लोग तो आप लोग तो ब्रह्मचारी हैं, आप लोग ने हमें संपूर्ण जीवन दे दिया है और आप लोगों के लिए बहुत आसान है। आप लोगों ने अपना सब कुछ आपके लिए तो मैं कोटि कोटि धन्यवाद देता हूँ। आप लोगों ने अपना सब कुछ छोड़ कर आप यहाँ पर भगवान के शरण ग्रहण किए और भागवत पढ़ रहे हैं। श्रीमद् भागवत में कहा गया कि श्रीमद् भागवत मात्र सुनने की इच्छा करने से भगवान हृदय में बंदी हो जाते हैं, पर आप लोग यहाँ पर तो अपना सारा पूरा 24 घंटे में से लगभग 24 घंटे आप लोग भागवत में ही लगा रहे हैं। मुझे विश्वास है जब आप लोग सो रहे होंगे तो भागवत के ही श्लोक या भागवत की चर्चा आप लोगों के मन में होती रहेगी, पूर्ण विश्वास है मुझे। इसलिए मैं आप लोगों सबके सामने में भीख मांगना चाहता हूँ कि आप कृपा करके मुझे आशीर्वाद दीजिए कि मैं आप लोगों जैसा अध्ययन कर सकूँ। ये वास्तव में परम पूज्य राधानाथ महाराज जी ने जो ये भागवत भक्ति विधान विद्यापीठ जो शुरू किया उसका मैं इतना आनंदित हूँ कि आप लोग जाके भविष्य में भागवत का प्रचार करेंगे। ये बहुत बड़ा कार्य है, बहुत बड़ा कार्य। इसी को करने के लिए चैतन्य महाप्रभु आया है,
और आप लोग ये कार्य कर रहे हैं इसलिए मैं आप लोगों को कोटि कोटि धन्यवाद देता हूँ। मुझे वास्तव में मेरी आप लोगों के सामने मुझे मैं जो कर हम लोग जो कर रहे हैं वो कहने की मतलब आवश्यकता नहीं है क्योंकि आप लोग इससे बहुत अच्छा कार्य कर रहे हैं, लेकिन एक आप लोग भागवत की प्रति ही इतना प्रेम है तो हम लोग अपना कुछ रियलाइजेशन शेयर करना चाहते हैं। हमेशा गृहस्थों से अगर मैं बात करता था तो उन लोग पूछते थे भागवत पढ़ने के लिए समय नहीं है, और किसी तरह से उनको फोर्स करके भागवत पढ़ने के लिए बिठा भी देते थे तो फर्स्ट कैंटो का फर्स्ट जो वर्स उन लोग पढ़ते थे तो परपट में ही उनके तीन चार दिन चले जाते थे, फिर छूट जाता था क्योंकि उन लोग नौकरी कर कर आते हैं, बेचारे थके मांदे रहते हैं, ऊपर से उनको अगर पढ़ने बोला जाए तो इतना पूरा उनका समय पूरा परपट में दो चार दिन, फिर बोलते थे नहीं चलो दूसरे वर्ष में जाओ, दूसरे वर्ष में जाते तो फिर उसमें बड़ा परपट, उसमें दो चार दिन चले जाते थे समझने के लिए पढ़ने के लिए, इस तरह से उन लोग का उत्साह भंग हो जाता था। फिर बोलते थे फिर कोई लोग कुछ भक्त मुझे मिले कहे कि प्रभु जी हमने तो थर्ड कैंटो फोर्थ कैंटो में पहुँचते हैं तो फर्स्ट कैंटो में क्या ब्रेन वॉश हो जाता है, जब हम लोग सेवन्थ कैंटो एट कैंटो में पहुँचते हैं तो फिफ्थ कैंटो सिक्स कैंटो में क्या ये ब्रेन वॉश हो जाता है, और किसी तरह से दो चार साल में हम लोग ट्वेल्थ कैंटो में पहुँच जाते हैं। अभी आप लोग तो यहाँ पे अध्ययन कर रहे हैं एक साल में कंप्लीट कर रहे हैं, लेकिन बाहर के जो गृहस्थ लोग हैं उन लोगों को तीन चार साल लगते हैं परपट पढ़ने के लिए। उन लोग कह रहे हैं कि प्रभु जी कैसे हो सकता है, हम लोग तो नहीं कर सकते, पर तीन चार साल के बाद जब हमारा भागवत कंप्लीट हो जाता है तो बस एक फॉर्मेलिटी हो जाता है पढ़ना, हम भूल जाते हैं। तब ये समस्या मेरे हृदय में थी तो भगवान ने मुझे प्रेरित करके मैं कुछ साधुओं के संग जो बचपन से ही भागवत पढ़ते आ रहे ऐसे साधुओं की संगति में मैं रहा हूँ, तो उन्होंने एक उपाय सजेस्ट किया था। वे लोग कैसे भागवत पढ़ते थे, वे लोग केवल संस्कृत के लोग बहुत विद्वान थे तो संस्कृत केवल पढ़ लेते थे, इस तरह से वे लोग 15-20 दिन में या हफ्ते भर में भी पूरा भागवत पढ़ लेते थे आसानी से, उसको भागवत पाठ करने की विधि रहती है तो उन लोग पूरे 7-8 दिन में उन लोग पूरा भागवत पढ़ लेते, ऐसे उन्होंने कई बार भागवत पढ़ा। तो हमने विचार किया कि क्या यही चीज़ हम लोग नहीं कर सकते, इनिशियली एक भागवत में रुचि लाने के लिए। तो हमने क्या किया कि प्रभुपाद जी के जो जितने सारे ट्रांसलेशंस हैं सारे ट्रांसलेशन निकाला, उसकी एक किताब बनाई ओनली ट्रांसलेशंस, और एक चैप्टर पढ़ने के लिए ट्रांसलेशन का हमें मुश्किल से 15-20 मिनट लगते, दो चैप्टर पढ़ने के लिए 30 मिनट, तीन चैप्टर पढ़ने के लिए 45 मिनट्स। तो यदि हम लोग रोज अगर एक अध्याय भी पढ़ ले तो साल भर के अंदर पूरा भागवत हो जाए, अगर दो अध्याय रोज पढ़ ले तो और कम में हो जाएगा, तीन अध्याय रोज पढ़े तो तीन महीने के अंदर पूरा भागवत पढ़ के हो जाएगा। इसके कई फायदे इस तरह से भागवत पढ़ने से, फायदा ये है कि पहली बात तो कथा का जो फ्लो है, कथा का फ्लो रहता है, जैसे आप कृष्णा बुक पढ़ते हैं तो कृष्णा बुक पढ़ते हो जो रस की अनुभूति होती है, जो कथा में आप डूब जाते हैं पूरी तरह से कृष्ण कथा, उसी तरह से वही अनुभूति आपको इस तरह से भागवत पढ़ने में होती है, तो कथा स्टोरी फॉर्म में है, फ्लो रहता है। तो उससे हम लोगों ने ये कोर्स प्रेजेंट किया और बहुत सारे रिस्पॉन्स आया हमें, ऑल ओवर वर्ल्ड से बहुत सारे रिस्पॉन्स आया, और लोग इसको पढ़ रहे हैं, 25 से 30 लोगों ने इसको भागवत को कंप्लीट कर लिया एक बार और दोबारा पढ़ रहे होंगे। पर उनके लिए हमने एक नियम डाला हुआ है कि आपको मिनिमम एक परपट तो रोज पढ़ना ही पड़ेगा प्रभुपाद जी को, एक नियम हमने डाला हुआ। कुछ लोग 2 से 3 परपट पढ़ते हैं, लेकिन हम लोगों ने एक नियम बनाया, मिनिमम आपको एक परपट पढ़ना पड़ेगा, तो इससे कि ये आप लोगों को ये ना हो जाए कि हम लोग को परपट बिल्कुल अवॉइड करना, ये सिद्धांत नहीं है। तो प्रभुपाद जी ने जो परपट दिए हैं वो सारे आचार्यों के जो कॉमेंट्रीज है उसका निचोड़, उसका सार प्रभुपाद जी ने अपने परपट में रखा है। तो हमें वास्तव में प्रभुपाद जी का परपट पढ़ लेने का और किसी आचार्य के टिकाओं का रेफरेंस करने की आवश्यकता नहीं है, फिर हम लोग करते हैं, लेकिन प्रभुपाद जी ने सब कुछ हमें दे दिया है अपने परपट से। तो इस तरह से फिर हमने एक और इन सारे भक्तों को एनकरेज करने के लिए हमने एक और चीज़ प्रारंभ की, वो है एक मैगजीन, नित्यम भागवत सेवा एक मैगजीन है जो हम लोग एक एक विषय पर, भागवत के एक एक विषय पर अलग अलग आचार्यों की दृष्टि से वो आचार्य एक इस विषय पर कैसा विचार करेंगे, ऐसे हम लोगों ने भागवत पर एक मैगजीन शुरू किया। और वो मैगजीन भगवान की कृपा से इतना बड़ा कि 25,000 से ज़्यादा लोग आज उसको पढ़ रहे हैं भगवान की कृपा से। और एक विषय को हम लोग 3 से 4 आचार्यों के टिकाऊ से हम लोग प्रेजेंट करते हैं। तो इस तरह से ये मैगजीन चला। फिर हम लोगों ने एक अनुष्ठान भी प्रारंभ किया। जब कार्तिक आता है तो लोग चाहते हैं कि हम लोग उन लोग पूरी तरह से अपने आप को एंग्रॉस करें कृष्ण कॉन्शियस एक्टिविटीज़ में। तो हम लोगों ने एक मंथ का अनुष्ठान किया। हम लोगों ने एक मंथ या दो मंथ का अनुष्ठान का अर्थ है कि हम उन लोगों को भागवत के चैप्टर्स डिवाइड करके देते हैं कि आज इतना चैप्टर पढ़ने, कल इतना पढ़ने, परसों इतने पढ़ने। इस तरह से वे लोग कार्तिक में अनुष्ठान करते थे, पूरा भागवत उनको कार्तिक में पढ़ के हो जाता था। रोज़ दो से चार घंटे उन लोग देते थे। अगर उनको महीने भर में भागवत पूरा कंप्लीट करना है तो उनको दिन में 5 से 6 घंटा भागवत पढ़ना होता है। अगर 2 महीने में करना है तो 2 से 3 घंटा देना पड़ता है। इस तरह से उन लोग का पूरा कार्तिक पूरा भागवत में हो जाता है, भगवान की लीलाओं में लोग डूब जाते हैं। फिर इस तरह से रिस्पॉन्स आने के बाद कुछ और हृदय में प्रेरणा हुई कि एक जिस तरह से आप लोग कर रहे हैं वैसे ही हम लोग एक विद्यालय प्रारंभ कर रहे हैं, भागवत विद्यालय। तो मैं आप सभी वैष्णव से आशीर्वाद मांगता हूँ, कृपा करके हमें बल प्रदान कीजिए कि हम लोग भी ये जो भागवत विद्यालय होगा, ये आप लोग जो कार्य कर रहे हैं उसी तरह से हम लोग जो हमारे 350 जो भक्त हैं उन लोग उसमें से कुछ ऐसे तैयार है जो भागवत कर सकते हैं। मतलब उन लोग पढ़ते हैं, बहुत इंटेंस पढ़ाई करते हैं उन लोग। तो हम लोग उनकी सहायता से हम लोग भागवत का एक विद्यालय खोल रहे हैं, जिससे कि हम लोग जिस तरह से ये क्लासरूम हो रहा है वैसे ये क्लासरूम सब जगह हो, सब जगह। तो हम लोग एक सिलेबस बना रहे हैं, प्रयास कर रहे हैं कि सिलेबस बनाया जाए। और उम्मीद करेंगे आप लोग सब आशीर्वाद दीजिए कि 6 महीने के अंतराल में हम लोग ये कोर्स प्रारंभ कर सकें। तो इस तरह से एक भागवत पढ़ने की भी विधि है। इससे जो एक और चीज़ है कि प्रचार, जो हम लोग मैंने कई देखा हमारे संस्था में प्रचार करते हैं लोग, बहुत अच्छे अच्छे क्लासेस प्रवचन देते हैं, लेकिन जब उनको उदाहरण देना होता है तो वे लौकिक उदाहरण देते हैं, भागवत का उदाहरण ही प्रेजेंट करते हैं। तो मैंने कुछ जो प्रचारक उनको पूछा, प्रभु जी यही चीज़ अगर आप भागवत के इस उदाहरण से अगर प्रेजेंट करते तो बहुत अच्छा होता। उन्होंने हाँ प्रभु, लेकिन मैंने पढ़ा ही नहीं। तो ये जो इस ट्रांसलेशन वाले पद्धति से, अगर ट्रांसलेशन वाली पद्धति से आप भागवत पढ़ेंगे तो आपको श्रीमद् भागवत का पूरा ओवरव्यू मिल जाएगा। और यदि बार बार पढ़ेंगे तो भागवत में कौन कौन सी कथा है, क्या है, कहाँ है और किस प्रश्न, तो आप रिलेट कर पाएंगे। और जब आपको क्लास देना होगा तो इमीजिएटली आप रिलेट कर सकते हैं। तो आपको किसी भौतिक जगत का उदाहरण देने की आवश्यकता नहीं है। और वैसे भी लौकिक जगत का उदाहरण देते हैं तो हम लोग सामने वाले व्यक्ति पर असर नहीं होगा, लेकिन भागवत का उदाहरण देंगे तो उन लोगों के सामने भागवत का एक चरित्र होता है। जैसे भागवत, जैसे हम लोग भागवत का उदाहरण देते हैं, मान लीजिए अजामिल का है या जड़ भरत का है, तो उन लोगों के सामने एक आदर्श रहता है, हाँ ये भागवत में है, ऐसा हुआ है। तो ये अंतर होता है कि एक हम लोग जब हमारे क्लासेस में एक लौकिक उदाहरण देना और एक उदाहरण भागवत में से प्रेजेंट करना, तो ये फ़ायदा हो जाता है कि इस तरह से अगर हम लोग ट्रांसलेशन की सहायता से अगर हम लोग भागवत पढ़ते हैं, एक सेपरेट स्टडी होना चाहिए। जो परपट के साथ हम लोग अध्ययन करते हैं सेपरेट हो सकता है, ये भी एक सेपरेट हो सकता है। दिन में आधा घंटा देके हम लोग इस तरह से रोज़ 2-2, 3-3 अध्याय पढ़ सकते हैं। तो ये है। तो आपको किसी को भी प्रश्न है तो पूछ सकते हैं सेशन में। ये हमारा छोटा सा मेरा प्रेजेंटेशन है। नहीं, सॉफ्ट ई मैगजीन है प्रभु जी, ई मैगजीन है। आप हमें ईमेल दे सकते हैं, हम आपको ईमेल आईडी आप हमें दीजिए, हम आपको मेल कर देंगे। नहीं, महीने में 2 बार आते हैं, एवरी एकादशी। हम लोग अभी 3rd canto में हैं, टीचिंग्स ऑफ लॉर्ड कपिला में। तो कल यही से मैगजीन निकालेंगे 3rd वाला, हमारा इशू अभी रेडी है, यही उनके पास है। देखिए एक कलर मैगजीन है, 8 पेजेस के साथ है। ऐसे तो भागवत 8 पेजेस में, किसी एक विषय को 8 पेजेस में डालना तो असंभव है, लेकिन एक प्रयास किया जा रहा है जिससे कि जो भागवत पढ़ने वाले लोग हैं उनको एक अलग एंगल मिले, एक अलग विजन मिले। और ये एनकरेजमेंट होता है प्रचारों के लिए। विद्यालय प्रभु जी, ये हम लोग पहले तो सिलेबस बनेगा पूरा, उसके बाद कहाँ पे प्रभु? जिन जो लोग जिन लोगों ने भक्ति शास्त्र कंप्लीट किया है और जो लोग भागवत पढ़ते हैं नियमित रूप से, तो ऐसे लोगों को लिया जाएगा, ऐसे लोगों को टीचर्स के रूप में लिया जाएगा, और फिर उन लोगों को हम लोग सिलेबस देंगे क्या कैसे ये भागवत, ये जो भागवत का कोर्स है जैसे प्रभु जी आप लोगों से करवा रहे हैं, तो वैसे ही हम समस्त इस्कॉन जगत सोसाइटी से हमारे हम लोग कुछ ऐसे डिवोटीज को चुनेंगे और उनको एनकरेज करेंगे कि ये जैसे भक्ति वृक्ष कैसे होता है, तो सिमिलर सिद्धांत के आधारित पर हम लोग ये भागवत विद्यालय खोल रहे हैं, पर एक्सक्लूसिवली फॉर श्रीमद् भागवत। तो इससे भक्ति वृक्ष जैसे स्टाइल से हम लोग भागवत को प्रेजेंट करेंगे, और जो 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 रचे पचे भक्त जो भागवत पढ़ते हैं, नियमित से भागवत सुनते हैं, और भागवत के पहले से जो प्रचारक है, ऐसे भक्तों को चुना जाएगा और उन लोगों को कहा जाएगा कि आप भागवत का स्कूल अपने अपने एरिया में खोलिए, ताकि US में हो, कहीं पर भी हो, रोज़ तो नहीं लेकिन हफ्ते में एक बार एक वन चैप्टर पर डे, हमारा भी यही कंसेप्ट है, वन चैप्टर पर डे एक्सप्लेन करना है, तो हफ्ते में एक दिन उन लोग आ सकते हैं और भागवत पढ़ सकते हैं। थैंक यू वेरी मच। हरे कृष्ण। मैं प्रभु गौरांग दर्शन प्रभु का मैं कोटि कोटि धन्यवाद देता हूँ कि आपने मुझे अपनी संगति दी। प्रभु जी, मैं अपना जीवन भर आपका ऋणी रहूँगा कि आप जो ये कार्य कर रहे हैं ये वास्तव में सराहनीय है, बहुत अच्छा। मैं आज आपकी क्लास में बैठा, आप बहुत अच्छी तरह से 4 घंटा एक चैप्टर पर आप समझा रहे हैं। मुझे जब बोलना होता है कभी कभी मुझे बहुत लोग आमंत्रित करते कि प्रभु आप एक चैप्टर पर बोलिए, तो मैं 1.5 घंटे में संक्षिप्त में समझा देता हूँ, लेकिन प्रभु जी ने 3-4.5-4 घंटे तक समझा, बहुत अच्छा लगा।
Any 10.
Then 11.20. First question, 10 marks. Third question, 15 marks. In that quote 17th verse. It's not mentioned here, but quote 17th verse. And second question also 10 marks. In that quote 8th verse, 8 and 9 both. So 40 marks are done. Then, I gave for 15, right? Make it 10. Third question, make it 10. So 1, 2, 3, 10 each. Then 5th question, 10 marks, but we need not quote the verses. 5th question, don't quote the verses, just summarize, 10 marks.
Those 3 verses which I asked to quote, you already know, right?